Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, let's try this again, this time with feeling. About a minute and a half past the hour, 6 p.m. here on the East Coast in real live program time. You're free to have it be whatever time you want it to be when you listen at your own choosing via the archives or the podcast links, because you know what? That's the cool thing about new media. Let's see. Sorry about last night. I've never done that before. I hope I never do that again. But things were really icky. And while the details are probably nothing you want to be in on, I found out today, found out this morning at the doctor's office, that I'm giving birth to a bouncing baby hernia. And I've got a defective gallbladder, most likely. It'll get ultrasounded in the morning. Oh, joy. But that probably accounted for the massive horror-inducing chest pains that were running around long about my solar plexus last night and scaring the living bejesus out of me. So that's what that was. So there's no certainty in it, but probably somewhere in the future there's going to be a few days of downtime for purposes of getting a punked gallbladder yanked out of me and some windowscreen put over a hernia to just sort of keep everything all held together. I wonder if it's going to be the galvanized windowscreen so that I'll probably set off like metal detectors at airports. I can see it now. Really, 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 Mr. Transportation Security Administration guy, I've got windowscreen inside me, okay? I promise. Ultimately, if I get on an airplane again, I really will probably have to show up in a damn Speedo. But that's, you know, neither here nor there, but I know you guys are curious, and, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of. I'm 45 years old. I am no longer bulletproof. And you know what? That is a tough thing to come to terms with. Yeah, well, it sucks is what it does. But, you know, to the extent that we've got a little bit of Medicaid coverage, and for that, I'm grateful. You know, with any luck at all, I'll at least get a shot of liquor and a rag to bite down on when they're cutting into me. After all, well, you know, when health care is universal, everybody will get the same quality of care. Looking forward to that day. But I've never been cut. Well, with the exception of a tonsillectomy when I was like 3 or 4, which I barely remember, but do remember enough to know that I was horrified and terrified, no matter the best efforts of my parents, I've never been cut on. I've managed to, you know, with the exception of, you know, a little bit of oral surgery, I've never had a knife applied to my hide, okay, with the exception of maybe stitching up a bad cut. I'm not looking forward to this, because I'm a big old pain sissy. That's why stuff went sideways last night, because I'm a big old pain sissy. And but you know, I don't have a problem admitting it. You know, hi, my name's Bob K, and I'm a pain sissy. So that's what was going down last night. This evening, and you know, it's such a shame, because I had really wanted to spend the evening wailing away on the waste, and that's where I started last night, wailing away on the waste of taxpayer dollars for the great big birthday party that that old Hitler Youth anti-aircraft gunner didn't even attend. I mean, that I can't tell you the depth to which that offends me. Not because he's Catholic. I would feel the same way if they had done it, you know, for the head of the Greek Orthodox or the Dalai Lama or the, you know, whoever the head man of Shinto is or some animist from the jungle. I would feel the same way because it puts the imprimatur of a state sanction of a particular religious sect on this nation, and it, and that is offensive in the extreme. Fortunately, I'm not the only one who's offended. Along about the bottom of the hour rolls around, we're going to be talking to Dave Silverman. Dave Silverman, you may recall, is our very good friend from American Atheists. And they're protesting. American Atheists are. Good for them. Ratzinger's New York City leg of his trip. They'll be outside St. Patrick's Cathedral. Being atheists and therefore decent people, the protest will, of course, be peaceful. It'll be, if you're in the New York area, come on down and stand in solidarity with them. It'll be on the west side sidewalk of Fifth Avenue between 46th and 47th Streets. That's Greek to me, but it probably means something to a New Yorker. So we'll be talking to Dave Silverman here in just a very few minutes. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Richard Nixon didn't even do this kind of stuff for Billy Graham. They just quietly sat in the Oval Office and talked about the dirty Jews. Billy Graham and Richard Nixon. Yeah, and hey, don't blame me. That's their words. Because, you know, they're both rampant anti-Semites. Nixon and Billy Graham. But even Billy Graham, you know, who is basically the Pope of America, didn't get this kind of treatment. Anybody seen the tab on the anybody seen the tab on what this shindig cost you and me? A lot. I haven't seen it either. So we'll be talking about that at the bottom of the hour. But for right now, well, let's see. Just a brief reminder. This message brought to you by McCain is the problem. McCain is the problem. For all of you Democrats who have already voted in your primaries, and that means just about everybody who doesn't live in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Indiana, or North Carolina, and are still engaged in the oh my godism of Hillary versus Obama, this message is for you. Focus. Why do I say that? Well, there a Supreme Court decision came down today, in which a 7-2 majority of the United States Supreme Court held that capital punishment is not cruel. Let me repeat, capital punishment is not cruel. If it ain't cruel, you don't have to worry about unusual. No, I wish I was joking. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman, over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony, as opposed today, Blind Justice and How to Do It. In its customary 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court has ruled that the Constitution only prohibits unusual punishments. Cruel and usual are hunky-dory, wrote Chief Justice John Roberts. Punishment is supposed to be cruel. And believe me, the Founding Fathers were inured to suffering. Look at everyone's teeth on the John Adams series, and that was probably their cleanest orifice. The court did offer some guidelines as to the definition of an unusual punishment. It would have to be too obscure for Jeopardy, explained John Roberts. Justice Antonin Scalia elaborated, quote, public disembowelment is permissible because everyone has heard of hanging, drawing, and quartering. Impalement is another time-honored practice. Burning at the stake, hot coals in the eyes, all those nostalgic favorites of the church are sanctioned by this court. So what is an unusual punishment? Imagine stuffing uranium in someone's mouth and then sewing the lips shut with piano wire. This would be an unusual punishment because I just thought of it and I'm applying for the patent. In his concurring opinion, Justice Anthony Kennedy explained, oh, forgive me, but Scalia knows where my grandchildren live. I wish that satire didn't have quite so much the dose of reality in it. So again, this message is for the Hilarians and the Obamaniacs. Obamaniacs, the problem is not Hillary. Hilarians, the problem is not Obama. Both of you, the problem is McCain. You want more of these decisions? Keep fighting like a bunch of three-year-olds among yourselves. Keep splitting the party. Keep dividing the nation. Keep it up. Go ahead. And then when someone you love is unjustly and illegally convicted of something and is headed to the horizontal crucifix, tell us about how you wish there was a decent Supreme Court. Tell us how you wish that a Democrat was in the White House. Okay? You do that. Because if there isn't, it will be your damned fault. The Hillary haters, the Obama haters, it'll be your fault. I just ticked off the primaries that are remaining, and I think I got most of them, if not all. Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. That's all that's left, but you'd never know it to watch the rhetoric, because it's getting hotter and meaner and nastier and more hateful. I gotta admit, I did not watch the pageant last night from ABC, and I'm really glad because I wasn't feeling that well to begin with, and I would have felt worse had I done so. I got up this morning and just did a little bit of news reviewing, and was, you know, immediately at 7:30 this morning, fit to be tied. The pageant last night was an embarrassment. Do Pennsylvanians really give a damn about Obama's pastor? I mean, really. But that's what it was about. And flag pins. It was about flag pins. Do you love the flag? Do you worship the flag, Senator Obama? Do you get on your knees and kiss the gold fringe on the flag every day, Senator Obama? If I didn't know better, I would have thought that I was watching a pageant that was sponsored not by ABC, which had recently done pretty doggone good work with regard to the torture business, but rather Fox. And you know what? I wouldn't have been far off. Why do I say that? Because Think Progress reports, last night's ABC News Democratic presidential candidates debate was co-moderated by George Stephanopoulos and Charlie Gibson to the unseen influence of Fox News' Sean Hannity job, was also on stage. Hannity, who for months has been aggressively pushing a story about Barack Obama's connections to a former member of a radical anti-Vietnam 1970s organization called the Weather Underground, interviewed Stephanopoulos on his radio show on Tuesday, where he pressed the ABC host to ask Obama about this. Now, just listen.
There are two questions that I don't think anybody has asked Barack Obama, and I don't know if this is going to be on your list tomorrow. One is the only time he's ever been asked about his association with Bill Ayers the unrepentant terrorists from the Weather Underground, who on 9/11 of all days in the New York Times was saying, "I don't regret setting bombs. I don't think we did enough." When asked about it by the Politico, David Axelrod said they have a friendly relationship and that they had done a number of speeches together and that they sat on a board together. Is that a question you might ask?
Well, I'm taking notes right now.
September 11, 2001, of all days, there was...
Okay, so there's the setup. One, what the hell is George Snuffleupagus doing on Hannity's program? I thought Snuffleupagus was trying to be a journalist. There's no journalism that goes on Fox Radio or Fox News or Fox Television or Fox damned well anything. So last night, George Snuffleupagus asks a question, and this is the transcript of it. A gentleman named William Ayers, he was part of the Weather Underground in the 1970s. They bombed the Pentagon, the Capitol, and other buildings. He's never apologized for that, and in fact, on 9/11, he was quoted in the New York Times saying, "I don't regret setting bombs. I don't feel we did enough. An early organizing meeting for your state Senate campaign was held at his house, and your campaign has said you're friendly. Can you explain that relationship for the voters and explain to Democrats why it won't be a problem?" Taking tips for a hit piece from George Snuffleupagus, or from Sean Hannity, by George Snuffleupagus. Are you sick? Are you sickened yet? Are you disgusted? And flagpin BS. So again, this message is for the Obamanians and the Hilarians who are still having purple polka-dotted blue screaming kittens with crocheted tails about their candidates with the primaries almost over. Do you want a Democrat in the White House, or do you want a squabble? Do you want a Democrat in the White House, or do you want a name call? Do you want a Democrat in the White House, or do you want a pick and bicker and yuck? You want a Democrat in the White House, or do you want more of this from the Supreme Court? A national drive to halt the death penalty in the U.S. has been defeated in the Supreme Court with the justices ruling that lethal injections, otherwise known by at least me, and someday everybody else will figure it out too as soon as they see the pictures of what it looks like, otherwise known by me as horizontal crucifixion, with the justices ruling that horizontal crucifixion, if properly administered, is a humane means of executing a condemned prisoner. The vote was 7-2. And the constitutional attack was absolutely turned back, and the moratorium on horizontal crucifixion, lethal injection, was set to resume. There's going to be state-sponsored killings all over the country now. Oh, and it's going to make us feel patriotic. How? Now listen to this. This is the rationale offered by Chief Justice John Roberts. He confirmed, according to this Sydney Morning Herald story, you have to go abroad to get any kind of honest reportage on this sort of stuff. He confirmed that there was strong support for the death penalty among the judges. Quote, this is from the opinion. This isn't him sitting in a bar. This is from the written official opinion. Quote, "We begin with the principle that capital punishment is constitutional. It necessarily follows that there must be a means of carrying it out. Some risk of pain is inherent in any method of execution, no matter how humane, if only from the prospect of error in following the required procedure." Well, that's all nice and tidy now, isn't it? Except it isn't. That is, of course, the same typical crappy, miserable, overeducated, derelict, flawed reasoning that we should all come to expect from the right-wing Supreme Court. "We begin with the principle that capital punishment is constitutional." Okay, hard work's done. In other words, they just presumed that it's okay to kill people in the name of the state, even though the United States is in a league with, China, Iran, Pakistan. Yeah, nice bunch. That still are the leaders in state-supported torture and death. But this is what you get from a right-wing Supreme Court and a right-wing, because, you know, the Bush administration was sent their Solicitor General, whoever that creep is, maybe Ted Olson or whatever, sent Jesus, we sure want to kill us some people, and it's fun to kill, you know, oh, golly, you gotta let us get back to the business of America and executing the bad people. Oh, God, they gotta die, definitely gotta die. We begin with the principle that capital punishment is constitutional. That just makes me almost damn near break a sweat. Why not examine the constitutionality of capital punishment? Well, these are originalists. It should be a dirty word to you, it is to me. These people believe that because life was nasty, brutish, and short in the 18th century, it's completely understandable, and not only understandable, but constitutionally required that we interpret it from a nasty, brutish, and short perspective today. It's astonishing. I don't know how John Roberts got the hell out of law school. We begin with the principle that capital punishment is constitutional. Oh, really? We begin with the principle that human beings breathe water. We begin with the principle that all senators must give speeches standing on their heads. We begin with the principle that automobile emissions actually make the atmosphere better. You can begin with anything and get to anywhere you want to go as long as you have dummied up the analytical process, and that's what's going on here. So again, Obamanians, Hilarians, keep sniping at each other. Because you know what? I can't imagine a Supreme Court being any nastier than this one, but you know what? You guys keep at it. You screw it up for us in November, and we won't have to imagine it will get nastier with some goose-stepping, jack-booted, right-wing, fascist, punk-ass thug, or two, or three, or four, appointed to the court by John McCain. Keep at it! Keep sniping! God, I've got an email sitting here. From one of the Obamaniac websites, and it says, Hillary wasn't wearing a flag pin either! Instead of coming out and condemning the whole flag pin bogus controversy, we've got websites taking the opportunity to snipe at Hillary. Or other websites taking an opportunity. Yeah, he wasn't wearing. Why won't he wear a flag pin? Oh my God, does he hate the flag? In other words, doing the Republican Party's work for them. And God, I despise Republicans. I hate them. I loathe them. And to see Democrats doing the damned work for them is, I mean, sure enough, sickening. So, you know, just keep at it. Keep at it, Obamanians. Keep at it, Hilarians. Even though there's nothing left in the way of primaries, really, and everybody understands that this is gonna get decided in Denver, keep at it! Because you know what? I'm committed. I'm gonna go and vote for my party's nominee. Because I understand that either one of them is miles, light years, tera light years light years, light beers, I could use one, the petalight years ahead of John McCain. I understand that, because I'm not a true believer. But there's a lot of Americans out there who are piss scared. And they actually are not sure who they're going to vote for, the Democratic nominee or more of George Bush. Guess what the sniping does? Yeah, pushes them, shoves them, drives them into the arms of that old war criminal McCain. Keep at it! Let's go to the phones before I have to call Dave Silverman at the bottom of the hour. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
You forgot Oregon.
Well, okay, but you guys mail it in anyway, so. Literally.
Well, yes, that's true. We tend to have rather civilized elections. As for the whole thing, the most amusing, well, I'm not sure if I would call it amusing, but the most striking thing I got out of the whole debacle last night was watching the moderator jump in and start debating Obama.
Well, like I said, I couldn't bring myself
to... Like he was one of the candidates. I mean, it was hysterically funny. He just completely dumped his moderator's role and started arguing.
Was it Gibson or Snuffleupagus?
Gibson. They were going on about the capital gains tax, and it was funny.
Well, I know that the reviews were not good. Even the Washington Post television critic said that Gibson and Snuffleupagus just turned in a disgusting performance last night.
Oh, yeah. And then the only other thing of note, actual substance, really, that came out of it.
There was substance? I never read about any substance.
Oh, yeah. The last few minutes, there was a little tiny bit of substance. Hillary is proposing for what sounded to me like the equivalent of, and before I say this, I want to preface this. I will vote for Hillary if she's the nominee. No question. I will march in there like a good little soldier and mark down Hillary's name if she's the nominee. But she was proposing the equivalent of the MAD doctrine for the Middle East.
Mutual assured destruction?
More or less. Nuclear umbrella. If Israel is attacked or if any of our friends are attacked in the Middle East, we respond.
Yeah. Light it up.
Oh, God, please don't say that. Please don't say that.
Mad. We ought to call, why not, if we're going to do it again, let's just call it the frothing at the mouth doctrine. The rabid doctrine.
Yeah. We got away with it the first time because the Russians...
Let's see. Susan, real quick, what can we make out of rabid? Rapid American patriotic intervention... No. That would be rapid. Rapid American... need something with a B. Intervention doctrine.
Bilateral.
Sure, why not? Rapid American bilateral intervention doctrine. Rabid. Oh, God. Hey, I gotta call and get Dave on the line, but thanks for that. Jesus.
Hey, you get lots of drugs, really, really good drugs when you have your thing taken care of.
Are you kidding? On the coverage I've got? Like I said, I'll be lucky to get a rag to chew on and a swig of whiskey.
Okay, hon, you have a nice night.
All right,
okay.
See you, Susan. Give our best to Donald.
Yeah.
Okay, so... email in I got to do the gallbladder about 5 years ago. They do it endoscopically these days, and the healing and pain is minimal. I thought they did it laparoscopically. The thing is that you need to know that if you have your gallbladder removed, the stomach acid will flow freely up and down your esophagus for the rest of your life. Mm-mm. Well, that sounds like a real blast. Making you have to take Prilosec daily to control it. That's fun, because I can't stand to take Prilosec. It and I don't get along. Diet change will control it. Why did I end up with it removed? I was unconscious and didn't have a say. Yeah, see. Feel better soon. Hope this doesn't bankrupt your family. Me too. But, you know, I hate the idea of being away from the microphone. That's what chaps my butt. I've given myself hell all day long for not being here last night, for bailing out like I did. I think it's safe to say that I was kind of ashamed of myself. But anyway, so we'll take a little musical interlude while I get Dave Silverman on the line from American Atheists. Looking forward to this. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime, maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine. Got laid off down at the factory, and their timing's not the greatest in the world. Heaven knows I've been working hard, wanted Christmas to be right for Daddy's girl. I don't mean to hate December. It's meant to be the happy time of year, and my little girl don't understand why Daddy can't afford no Christmas here. If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime, maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine.
Merle Haggard. I think that's I can't help thinking that's like a theme song for us going toward the election. If we make it through December, you know, just get to the election without coming completely unglued. As promised, spokesman for American Atheists, Dave Silverman, is on the line with us. Hey, Dave, man, it's good to talk to you.
Bob, it's always a pleasure to be on your show. How have you been?
Setting them up and knocking them down. So
we're waiting for November, I think that song should have been. If we can make it through November, we'll be fine.
Yeah, or maybe January 20th. Or
yeah, there you go.
But, you know, too many syllables, can't make it scan. But exactly. And you guys are waiting for tomorrow, right?
We are waiting for. Well, we're doing all sorts of things. We were down in Washington D.C. yesterday, and then we're doing it again on Saturday in New York.
Saturday. My bad.
Saturday in New York. We're going to be meeting. It's all up on the Know God blog. We're going to be meeting, I believe it's on Fifth Avenue. And we're going to have quite a bit of press there. And we're going to have a pretty good showing of atheists there to voice our opposition to the Pope's policies, the Pope's meddling in our affairs, and, of course, the pedophilia thing.
There is that.
And I'm bringing my daughter to the protest. My daughter's 11 years old, and I had to explain to her, because I don't want to bring her, you know, just as a kid in tow. I want her to know what she's protesting.
Right.
So I had to explain to her the whole pedophilia thing. And to an 11-year-old girl, it scared the heck out of her that we've got somebody who's a national leader who went out of his way to hide pedophiles so that there wouldn't be a scandal.
You know, that just makes the little hair stand up on the back of my neck, Dave. But he really did, didn't he?
He really did.
I mean, he authored the memo that urged the church to try to intimidate victims of pedophilia into shutting up and covering up.
Yes, he basically authored the document that said pedophilia cases are within the realm of the church. They need to be held in private. They need to be held from public view, and that. And check this out. Part of that document read that they couldn't reveal anything to the authorities until 10 years after the victim turned 18.
In other words, under most demographic situations, until after the offending priest was dead.
Or out of statute of limitations.
Oh, I didn't know there was a statute
of
limitations.
Statute of limitations.
Wow.
So the priest is either dead. The person's now 28 years old, and it has probably been 15 to 20 years since the incident.
But nobody can question this guy about this, and I find that incredibly disturbing.
I find it sad that we have, I mean, there's a lot of Catholics in this world, and a lot of them question him, okay? I always question numbers when I see the number of Catholics in the world. I believe it's somewhere around 41% of the country is Catholic. But I know a lot of people who the Vatican thinks are Catholic and are not attending church and don't believe in the Pope or anything like that. So I always question that. But there's a lot of people out there who unquestionably follow the Vatican. And It's my personal opinion that these people are simply victims of brainwashing.
Well, I think you're right. I can't remember. Oh gosh, I had this just a couple of weeks ago, but there was somebody talking about where the Roman Catholic Church is experiencing its greatest growth, and the person said, you know, the greatest growth is being experienced in underdeveloped third world areas where superstition is still rampant. And said, you know, basically the church is growing where they still do their worship. It may have been somebody in the chat room where they still do their worshiping with chicken bones.
That's right. That's true. And the other good statistic is that the only reason that the Catholic population in America is stable is because of immigrants. People who live in America, once they hear the church, once they hear what's been going on, they leave. So Catholics in the states are leaving the church. The only reason the Catholic population in America is stable is because of immigrants from those less developed countries that are coming in. That's a lot of people.
Well, yes, it is.
That's a lot of people. And it's a shame, but it's also a good thing, because one of the things that the Catholic Church did not count on was the availability of information and the support that people would give to the victims of pedophilia, the victims of the Catholic Church. And there are so many of them. The Catholic Church has lost about $2 billion so far in lawsuits, and that's in America alone. And one of the things that I find so angering about the pontiff is he came here, he opened up his hands, he said, I'm deeply ashamed about this. And he chided the U.S. bishops for how poorly they handled the situation. But they handled it according to his documents. They handled it according to his instructions. And he still has not done anything to address the rape and pedophilia problems in Africa, in Ireland, in Germany, and all over the rest of the world where it's still rampant, but because of the lack of communication and because of the perhaps of the other factors, there's no real scandal. Now, I should say that in Germany there's a heck of a scandal going on, but he's done very little for Africa. He's done very little for Ireland.
Well, if you want to mention, but if you want to mention Africa, Dave, you can't hardly mention Africa without noting the enforced hell that he has subjected that pathetic continent to by virtue of the ban on something as simple as a condom.
Yes, yes. Married couples when married couples have sex, if one person has AIDS and the other doesn't, they must, according to Catholic law, have unprotected sex, or else they will both burn in hell.
And then, and they have to conceive a baby. And if the baby's born with HIV, you know, and on and on and on and on
and on and on and on. It's amazing to me how careless and callous this Pope is. If they would just look and say, you know what? There's nothing more important than human life. Let me just digress a little bit.
Sure.
I think you probably know that I was raised Jewish, and I know quite a bit about Jewish doctrine. And there's there's a whole bunch of Jewish laws. There's hundreds and hundreds of Jewish laws, what you can eat, what you can't eat, what you can do, what you can't do. But the number one law is that you can break all the other laws if it saves a life.
Yes. I am familiar with that.
Catholics can't even use a condom to save a life. They would rather you die a slow, painful, horrible death and take somebody else with you.
See, I get letters and stuff, and people get upset with me about this. But it's when you consider the situation in light like that, that it's hard for me just to ignore the current Pope's, what they say was just a dalliance with Nazism and his membership in the Hitler Youth. Because doing a decision like that with regard to a continent like Africa or the developing world just about anywhere, Asia, Africa, the Central, South America, what have you, that smells a lot like eugenics.
It does, doesn't it? It really does stink of eugenics. Now, I mean, I don't blame Ratzinger for being in Germany. I don't like the fact that he allegedly and literally pointed out Jews for deportation. This is not something that I've heard proof of. I've just heard rumors of it. I don't know the details of what he did as a Hitler youth, but he was a youth. And you can't hold the actions of a youth against him for life. But when you talk about the fact that he is now in a position of extreme power, and he is not using it to better this world at all, he's using it to make it worse. And that is why we're protesting.
And I think it's a very well-placed protest. Let me back up just a minute. All of these things that we're talking about are factual.
Yeah.
And, you know, like it, well... I've made the argument, Dave, that the First Amendment has become in this country nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry. And I think there's a lot of evidence to support my argument. However, the First Amendment guarantees people the freedom of religion. I wish it was more clearly defined as guaranteeing us freedom from it, too.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I know.
That's the implication. I think the whole freedom from it was certainly implied, and then it was invented after the fact as not being in there.
Well, and that's the problem we have. You know, one of our hosts, John Fox, is in Australia, and he has told us that in their constitution, it is clearly stated that it's freedom of and freedom from. Because sooner or later you're going to get idiots on the Supreme Court like what we've got now who say that if it doesn't state it explicitly, it doesn't exist. That interpretation is evil. But anyway, beyond that, though, so people have the freedom to worship as they choose, and if they choose to worship with this guy, so be it. But the thing that just gets under my skin something fierce, have you guys been able to come up with any numbers? Do you have any idea what we as taxpayers spent yesterday on the birthday party that Ratzinger didn't even attend?
No, we don't have any numbers for that. They don't release that kind of stuff. And one of the things that we're working on is we're trying to figure out, how much money we actually spend on religion just by giving them the tax breaks that they do. I mean, we have to look at it objectively, okay? If the king of France, or I should say, if the prime minister of Britain came to America on his birthday, it's possible we'd throw him a taxpayer-funded party. That's possible.
Right.
Okay? It's possible. But you know what? The first largest landowner in the country is, of course, the federal government. The second largest landowner is the Catholic Church. The third largest landowner is the Episcopalian Church. And these guys don't pay any property taxes at all.
Nope.
We're going into a recession. A whole lot of people are losing their homes. How much money would we all save if we weren't forced to pay higher taxes so that the churches pay none? How much money would we save? I don't know, but it'd be a lot.
It would be a boatload. How much less of a bind would we be in if the churches were paying their fair share?
A heck of a lot less. And you know what? We wouldn't have those huge mega churches. And if we did, that'd be fine because they'd be paying their taxes. And the good news would be they'd be able to preach from the pulpit. They would like that. I'm sure they would like that. So I'm not sure if it would be a good thing given that. But you know what? They got to pay their taxes. A church is not promoting a charity, is not doing a charitable event if all it is doing is proselytizing to its membership or increasing its membership. That's not charity.
No.
And as far as American Atheists is concerned, if an organization does not show its charity, as in charity, as in not self-serving charity, as in country-helping charity or world-helping charity, then it should not deserve a tax break. American Atheists provides a free library, a big free library, to anyone who wants to come see it. It's one of the largest libraries of atheistic journals in the world, and it's big, and it's free, and it's a public service. And we can show it, and we have to declare our income, we have to show our income, and we do get 501c3 tax-exempt status as a non-religious educational organization. But churches do not have to do that.
Because they get to hide behind being a religion.
Yes. They don't have to declare their income. They don't have to show their income, and they do not have to prove anything charitable at all in order to get off 100% scot-free of property taxes, which, in my view, is forced taxation on every American citizen, forced tithing, rather, for every American citizen, for every church, every synagogue, every mosque, even the Scientologists.
I've never considered it in that light, but you know what? You're absolutely correct.
And it's illegal. It's clearly illegal. It's clearly unconstitutional because every single citizen of this country, every single landowner in this country is paying extra money by force at almost gunpoint from the American government in order to compensate the American government for the taxes that they're not making from every religious organization out there. It's a ripoff. And it's wrong.
But given the status of the court system these days, is there any point in trying to challenge this in court? Is that something that you guys have in the works? Do you ever think about it? I mean,
we think about it all the time, but we'd lose if we did it now. See, the thing about it is, you have to challenge a case when you have a chance of winning.
Right.
If we went into the Supreme Court with this and the Supreme Court decided against us, we're screwed.
And people are screwed for a generation, sure.
People are screwed for a long time.
Yeah, because stare decisis.
If you decide something, it's real hard for them to overturn itself.
Well, we saw that with the decision on capital punishment. We start, Robert said we start from the presumption that capital punishment is constitutional. Well,
right.
There's nothing that's
been judged that way.
Right.
So it's a very difficult thing to do, and it is not a battle that we want to lose. And if we went into it now, we would lose. So that there's a problem there.
That's got to be incredibly frustrating.
So right now we're stuck with it.
Yeah, and you've just got to sit there and watch it. And I mean, could we at least?
And you've got to, and that's it. And it's forced subsidization for the church. And then the church comes out. The Catholic Church comes out. They lost $2 billion. They want. They lost $2 billion because they were raping children, okay?
Yes.
I want to say that again. They lost $2 billion because they were raping children. And now, because of their lack of funds, they're closing dioceses, they're closing churches, they're closing schools. Their big solution is, of course, to ask the U.S. government for more money.
How so?
And that's what the Pope is here for. He's not here for anything other than getting more money. That's why he's here.
And we're going broke. I mean, this is one of those moments, Dave, when it would be easy for me to just, you know, throw a rock at a window or kick a door. I mean, this drives me nuts.
Yeah.
The birth
awake at night.
The birthday party.
You have to think about how much money we're talking about here. The Catholic Church is, what, 1,800 years old, okay? They've inherited everything any ever owned by a priest or a lay minister. They demand every employee take a vow of poverty. They require tithing from all of their people. That's a billion or so people in this world, and they pay no taxes. Think of how much money that is over 1,800 years. And let's not even talk about the Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, and the Holocaust, where they made billions of money, billions of dollars. And they're just sitting there on this money, not spending it. Mother Teresa had lapses of faith because they weren't spending money on the poor. And now they say, oh, we lost $2 billion. We need more money from the federal government. We need you to have school vouchers so that we can use public funds to fund our parochial schools, because we can't afford to keep our parochial schools open because we lost so much money because we were raping children.
Children, yeah. You know, there's a song that I play every Wednesday night for our prayer meeting edition by an Australian comedy team called The Chaser. And he said, and there's a line in it that says, 2,000 years with interest, they'd be rolling in the dough. And that's what we're talking about here.
That's what we're talking about. It's got to be, and I say the words got to be because there is no evidence. There's no disclosure. We have no idea what they're worth. Okay? We can only surmise that they're worth billions and billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars.
And see, one of the things that bothers me a lot is when somebody does rise up in the church, who wants to do things a little bit differently, you know, the church hierarchy is there to smack them down. Ratzinger, before he became Pope, was, of course, John Paul II's main enforcer. And one of the things that John Paul II did, lickety-split, was to absolutely crush the liberation theology movement that was taking hold in Central and South America, that was asking questions not, why don't we feed the poor, but why do the poor have to be poor?
Right.
And I remember there was one priest out there, I can't remember his name, but he said, if I feed the poor, they call me a saint. If I try to make the poor not be poor anymore, they call me a communist.
Right.
So
isn't that a scary thing?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you're a bad guy if you help to make, and the reason is that when you're poor, you're desperate, and when you're desperate, you're religious. That's the way they think. Okay?
And that's the way it largely is. I mean,
they cling to, well, there's a better life in heaven when they're starving and they're dying. And that's what the Catholic Church relies on.
Yeah,
on that desperation.
It reminds me of the great song by the wonderful labor songwriter of the early 20th century, Joe Hill.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Live on hay day by day. There'll be pie in the sky when you die."
Yes.
And that's what they're offering, literally, pie in the sky.
That's literally what they're offering. Literally what they're offering.
But you can, but for now, starve or die of HIV or make sure that the child that we insist that your wife bears dies of HIV. You know, that's
don't
fine.
Don't use a condom. Don't use a condom. Don't have an abortion. Don't have gay sex. Don't do stem cell research because then you might live longer and cure disease, and that would be bad. Don't feed the poor. We have tons of money, but we'll send Mother Teresa out there to see the desperation so badly that she loses faith in her own tradition, in her own church. I mean, that's got to be pretty bad. I mean, you can think about it. That's pretty bad for Mother Teresa to go atheist, or at least to consider atheism, because of all the terror that she's seen, all the starvation and death that she's seen, that's completely preventable. Completely preventable.
Yeah,
this champion of immorality, this pope, is sitting on enough money to fix major problems in the world. Major problems, starvation. He could fix it.
Oh, I know. I've got one of the chatters in our chat room, Dave, is saying in Africa the Catholic Church will spend millions and millions of dollars on expensive HIV medicine and funerals and cemetery plots, but they won't spend 10 cents on a condom to prevent it.
That's right. That's right. And in Africa, they also have a similar problem to the sex scandal here. It's not so much raping children. It's priests raping nuns and getting them pregnant because they won't use a condom.
Oh, Lord.
Think about that one for
mercy.
A minute.
And see, that's the thing. If there's a God, he's been on extended vacation for a while. And just not, you know, you can almost see him getting back. Oh, my me! What have they done?
There are many times when I really, really wish there were a God. Because, I mean, it would be great if Ratzinger went to hell. It would be great if all these people who put money and power and greed above human life went to hell.
I don't care which God it is. If it's Zeus and he wants to hurl a lightning bolt and scorch George Bush's shorts, that's fine by me. I don't care if it's Ahura Mazda and he wants to roast Dick Cheney. Cool. Huitzilopochtli from ancient Mexico. Fine, but you know that divine, you know, yeah, the divine justice thing would be real handy, Dave. It just ain't there.
I wish it were there, man. I really do. People tell me why I want to be an atheist, and it's not about wanting to be an atheist. It is about atheism is a realization. It's a conclusion. It's not a religion. It's really not even a philosophy. It's a conclusion. But, man, I really wish we were all going to live forever. I really, really do. And I really wish those bad guys would get their just desserts. Unfortunately, we know, and I think we also know that they know that they won't. I think these religious folks are atheists. I think they're just making it up. I think Ratzinger's an atheist. I do. And I don't like counting people like that, the scum like that, amongst my ranks. But I personally believe, no proof. No proof, but I personally believe that anyone who allows people to suffer in exchange for their greed, Pat Robertson, the Pope, Tilton, Benny Hinn, these people are atheists. And I hate to count them among my kind, but I think they are.
Or maybe more than atheists. Maybe they're just plain old-fashioned capitalists. And
maybe.
I mean, because capitalism, you know, you read your Milton Friedman and stuff, anything can be justified as long as there's a buck to be made. You know, we talked about Benny not showing up for his own his own birthday party. I actually I saw a comment that explained why. He is so regal and so royal and so magnificent that no one is allowed to see him eat in public.
Isn't that awesome?
Is it because we'd see the fangs?
With a drool.
Yeah. If he had to take the House of Whoville hat off, we'd see the horns.
Oh, my goodness. He can't eat in public. How wonderful for his eminence.
Yeah.
How primitive is this? How barbaric is this? How ancient is this? This isn't civilized. This isn't normal. This is barbarianism. This is a holdover from barbaric times, and it needs to be eliminated. Pope Benedict needs to be put in his place. And that's why American atheists and the New York City atheists are having a protest on Saturday.
I wish I was closer to New York. I would be there in a minute.
It's going to be great. My daughter's going to be there. She's psyched up.
You have told her if she sees a priest to yell, "Daddy, Daddy," and come running to you, right? I mean,
no, I have not. I have told her that 99% of priests do not rape children, but that leaves 1% of very, very bad people.
And they don't have to wear a badge or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Or tattoo. Or even better yet, prison stripes.
Well, yeah. And so, as a consequence, you know, it really is a case of one bad apple spoiling the barrel.
Yeah, I've met many priests that are wonderful people. I mean, they go into it with the intent of doing good. But, you've really got to wonder which one is the 1%, because that 1% is real bad. And they've been moved around so often that nobody knows where they are.
Yeah, well, yeah, hide the priest. Exactly.
Yes, hide the priest. Hide the pedophile.
I'm sitting here looking at a story, and I know I promised you'd only be here for about a half an hour, but, you know, things get out of hand when we talk, Dave.
It always happens.
I'm sitting here looking at a story out of Waukegan, okay? Headline, "Mom charged with stabbing daughter 6. Told Waukegan police the girl was possessed."
Yes. Now, the question is, will she be put in jail for murder? Because that's what she did.
Police interviewed friends and coworkers, and nobody said Vasquez Salazar had problems with drugs or mental illness.
Well, obviously that latter part is wrong.
If you believe in demons,
because you think she's possessed, you have a problem with mental illness.
Yeah, if you believe in demons.
If you believe in demons, you have a problem with mental illness. You certainly do. Or maybe you're just a little bit on the dumb side. But, I mean, obviously, if you murder your child, you have a problem with mental illness. And if you blame religion, as these people often do, then we really have to look at the religion and say, hey, what is this religion teaching these people? You know, there was another report out, and this is a bit of a digression, but there was another report out recently where members of the Family Research Council wanted marriage incentives, a marriage program for the church, from the government, because they said that unwed mothers and divorcees cost the taxpayers billions and billions of dollars. But what they didn't talk about was the fact that the evangelical Christians have the highest divorce rate in the country at 34%, and that atheists have the lowest divorce rate in the country at 21%. So where is the cause and effect? It's just amazing, and I know that was a digression, but
it's not really a digression because it's a cultural problem, and frankly it's a religious failure problem, because it's fundamentalists, but you know, after the fundies there's another sect and another sect and another sect. Divorce itself is it's a human failing because sometimes people just don't get along. On the other hand,
I don't think it's a failing at all.
No, okay.
I don't think divorce is a failing. I think things don't always happen the way you expect.
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes, a lot of times, divorce is a very good thing.
Yeah, act in haste, repent in leisure.
Yes.
Or repent in divorce court. Okay, yeah, I buy that. But the thing is, I think what you're pointing to is that there are things that exacerbate problems.
And these things are often religion itself.
Yes. I had a news.
Nobody is willing to say the emperor has no clothes. The problem here is religion. Religion is looking at this. Now, am I saying that religion causes divorce? Well, I don't know. But it certainly does point to it. Now, doesn't it?
Sure.
And there's a 30% difference. Atheists are 30% less likely to get a divorce than evangelical Christians. What does that tell you? That's a pretty mean statistic right there.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. I've got another news story that was just sort of ran into from one of our listeners or news ninjas about and this story, lest anybody think that we're just sitting here hammering Catholics, a news story about an 8-year-old Yemeni girl, Dave, who had been given in marriage, had already been married to a 30-year-old man by her father. She had to sneak to the Yemeni government house and beg for asylum because she had already been sexually abused by her husband, who came out and said, well, it was okay for me to have sex with her even though she's 8. It's condoned by the Quran.
I know that there's a part of the Quran that actually specifies that Muhammad had sex with, I believe, an 8-year-old.
9-year-old, I think, Aisha.
9-year-old, yeah. Somewhere along that line.
And, mercy.
Sick,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, in the last month, I had a story of a woman in Wisconsin, I believe, who prayed her daughter, who went into a diabetic coma. She prayed her to death instead of taking her to the doctor. And then the outfit out in Oregon that prayed their 15-month-old daughter to death, waiting for God to heal bronchial pneumonia.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't happen to atheists.
Atheists
go to the doctor.
That's evolution. That's natural selection right there. Stupid people don't breed or the kids don't live. The problem is that the stupid people are being told to breed more often and they're making more stupid people. And I shouldn't use the word stupid.
No, but it is what it is.
Mm.
And frankly, there's nothing to suggest that this 6-year-old who was... her mother slashed her throat in the name of God, Dave.
Amazing.
There's nothing to suggest that 6-year-old was going to grow up to be an ignorant person. In fact, the evidence that was put forward was that she was incredibly bright and that she was sweet and wonderful and beautiful little girl, vibrant, intelligent.
That's probably why her mother thought she was possessed.
True enough. The case in Oregon even is going to provide. There's going to have to be a legal challenge as to the validity of criminal charges being levied against these parents because of a law, a religious freedom law.
Yes. Yes. And it's an unconstitutional law that basically allows. And this is the thing. It basically provides a second set of rules, a second set of laws, if you're religious. If you're religious, according to the law in Oregon, you are allowed to beat your children because it says in the Bible, spare the rod and spoil the child. Therefore, it is your religious right to beat your children or to beat your wife.
Oh, by the way, yeah, in the case of...
that we live in a country. It's 2008 here, and this is still happening right here.
And little Evelyn Vasquez Salazar, 6 years old, the story goes on to note that her grandmother consulted with the mother and also believed that Evelyn was possessed. You know, you guys do a lot of good work, and I'm really, really grateful for the effort that you make because I like to think that because there are free thinkers, because there are atheists out there, because you guys are unafraid to get out and say the unvarnished, unfly-blown truth that even though these things happen, maybe one or two or three less happen because somebody wakes up.
I hope so. I hope so. That's the meaning of life in my book. You know, after you're dead, the only thing that's left is the ripples you leave behind.
Exactly.
Hopefully we'll leave good ripples.
Well, Dave, thank you so much. And like I said, best of luck. And shoot me an email or something and let me know how it goes, if there's some pictures or whatever. We'd love to see him.
I'm going to post pictures on the blog. The blog is nogodblog.com. That's the American Atheist blog. I'll be posting pictures up there of the protest Saturday night, hopefully, when I get home. Bob, I really do appreciate you having me on the show again. It's always a pleasure to talk with a friendly voice.
And do be careful, because you guys are nonviolent. You guys are, you're not rock throwers or anything. But you know what? The other side is. So watch your back. Please be careful, because those William O'Donohue types are out there, and they do death threats and stuff. So, but then again, you guys are probably used to that.
I dare them to come after me. I dare them. I think they're overblown. I think they're blowhards. I dare them to come after me. I'll be there. They know where to find me.
Good enough. Hey, Dave, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. And we'll be in touch.
All right, and give my best to everybody, please.
Thank you very much, Bob. Take care, everybody.
Bye now. Dave Silverman, Communications Director for American Atheists, nogodblog.com. Maybe Sunday morning. Hop over to nogodblog.com and see how the protest went. Because you know what? This needs protesting. No one is suggesting that a person doesn't have a right to worship as they choose. But why in heaven... See, I'm doing it. Why in the world do I have to pay for it? I have nothing against anybody of any particular faith, but I ought not have to subsidize it. Is that so hard to understand? Not for you guys. But apparently, for the high and mighty, it is something approaching impossible to understand. So we'll take a little break. We'll come back with hour number two. Chime in if you want. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 304-658-3333. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with the need to cut the tar. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. When the work's all done and the sun sets low, pull out my fiddle and the rosin up the bow. Kids are asleep, so I keep a catalog. And thank God I'm a country boy. I'd play Sally Gooden all day if I could, but the Lord and my wife wouldn't take it very good. So I fiddle when I can, work when I should. And thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Well, I wouldn't pay my life for diamonds or jewels. I never was one of them money-hungry fools. Rather have my fiddle and my falling tools. Boy. Yeah, city folks driving in a black limousine. A lot of sad people thinking that's somebody keen. Son, let me tell you now exactly what I mean. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Yes, sir. But my daddy's till the day he died. And he took me by the hand, held me close to his side. Said to live a good life, play my fiddle and cry. And thank God you're a country boy. Well, my daddy taught me young how to hunt and how to whittle. Taught me how to work and play a tune on a fiddle. Taught me how to love and how to give just a little. Woo! Thank God I'm a country boy, yeah!
Thank you. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, that's... I never have a conversation with Dave Silverman from American Atheist that I don't absolutely revel in. I don't think, you know, these folks, among other things, are so incredibly tolerant of whatever and however anybody wants to believe, and they just want the right to not have to pay for it and not have to acknowledge it as received wisdom or received truth. What's the darn hard about that? Why is that so hard for some people to get? You know, William O'Donohue from the Catholic League gets his maiden forms all in a bunch if you suggest that the leader of his church is an ex-Nazi. Why? He just is. I mean, he just is. He was a member of the Hitler Youth. He may very well have helped in the deportation of Jews to the concentration camps. They believe that they've got a religious mindset that believes that all that can be forgiven. They believe that because he was a confirmed Catholic, Adolf Hitler was forgiven. Adolf Hitler is in heaven, according to the hardcore Roman Catholics, because he was confirmed as one. Never mind whether there's a heaven or a hell. There's a wonderful, wonderful book, excellent piece of writing, piece of journalism called Murder in the Vatican by a gentleman named Gregoire, G-R-E-G-O-I-R-E. And he details the fact that the man who became John Paul I was a profound thorn in the side of old schoolers like Pope Paul, and that he actually got in real trouble with the Vatican for suggesting that just for appearance's sake they excommunicate Adolf Hitler. Really? So within their theology, Adolf Hitler has little angel wings and a harp, and he's floating around chatting with Jesus. Is it any wonder then when you hear statements made like Reverend Hagee, who is a rabid Catholic basher, when he says things like God sanctioned the Holocaust? You know, that's not crazy, crazy old Ahmadinejad in Iran. That is a multimillionaire televangelist in the United States of America who also just happens to be John McCain's spiritual advisor. Yeesh. Email rolls in. Why not mix church and state? This needs to be put simply. It's not about inviting 65 churches onto the front stage, taking up all our precious time and budget. It's about the history of the church. Our forefathers lived in Europe just coming out of 1,600 years of complete tyranny and despair brought on by big church and big state. The church purported the bugaboo, and everyone kowtowed the church, and the kings of the nations of Europe had to pay 20% of their treasury, some of them 50%. To the Pope every year. The Pope, in turn, ran the bugaboo scare tactics and soothed the masses so they wouldn't blame their poverty and despair on a tyrannical and greedy dictator. The only king that got smart was Henry VIII. He simply didn't want to kowtow to the bugaboo, and he wanted to keep all his wealth. Well, that's not entirely true. Henry VIII died convinced that he was a good Catholic. But I get the idea. Henry felt that as the sovereign of England, he had the right to be the head of the church, and he also damned well wanted a divorce and was going to have it any way he could get it. He thought he was a good Catholic. He really did. And the reason he was that way was because he was not the first son. He was not intended for the throne. and was early on trained for the priesthood, some bishopric or archbishopric or something, you know, what happens to the second and third sons of royal houses, that kind of thing. But yeah, Martin Luther recognized the church for what it is, a money-making organization that does nothing for anyone. True enough, Martin Luther had his own problems, and was not exactly the most tolerant fellow on earth. Can you imagine the American people paying taxes to the city, taxes to the county, taxes to the state, taxes to the federal government, and taxes to the state church? That's what happens in England. You see, the Church of England has the king as its leader, so everyone in England pays their taxes to the ministry and taxes to the king, Church of England. It's hard to accumulate wealth in England. Well, maybe one of our UK listeners will call in and elaborate on that. How long does mankind, and this is, you know, this really is the $64 question, how long does mankind have to suffer the abuse of these constructs that purport to save our souls? I, for one, would never give over the keeping of my soul to the likes of a Nazi pope or a creepy preacher. My soul, my behavior, my life is my own. When I go to the pearly gates, I am fully prepared to stand on my own two feet and answer for every moment of my time on earth with pride. Hear, hear, hear. I can't make the statement as being factual, but I'd say that there's probably 99-1 odds that Nelly Vasquez Salazar was Roman Catholic, and coming from third world Mexico, there's every reason to believe that obviously she believed in demons. When the crime was discovered, she told police that the girl, that little 6 year old, her daughter, Evelyn, little 6 year old Evelyn, she told the cops that Evelyn was possessed and attacked her with a knife in bed and slammed her into a wall before her mother grabbed the knife away and slashed the girl's throat. Upon being further questioned, Nelly Vasquez Salazar confirmed that the little 6-year-old didn't attack her. There was no attack at all. She sobbed through her bond hearing. Bond was set for her at $5 million. Little Evelyn's body was found early Monday in a bedroom of her apartment in the 4200 block of Hickory Hills Drive in Waukegan. Her throat had been slashed, and she had been stabbed several times in the face, neck, chest, and arms. In Jesus' name, amen. Her body was in the apartment several hours before police discovered her. Now, listen carefully. A large butcher knife was found near the girl's body, along with an image of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, with stab marks through each person depicted in the scene. As noted in the conversation with Dave Silverman, police interviewed friends and co-workers, and nobody said that Nelly Vasquez Salazar had problems with drugs or mental illness. Dear Lord. Confronted by detectives with inconsistencies in her story, Vasquez Salazar later changed her account, told police her daughter did not attack her. She said, "I want to tell the truth. I don't want to live." She grabbed the knife and stabbed her daughter. Evelyn fell to the floor, and Vasquez Salazar stabbed her again. In the name of Jesus, amen. She said she'd recently been in contact with her mother in Mexico to share concerns that Evelyn had been sleepwalking several times a week. The grandmother, after talking with Vasquez Salazar, also believed Evelyn was possessed. To the religiously insane, somnambulism is demon possession. To the religiously insane, demon possession justifies murder. I guess Benny the Rat doesn't have time to go and take confession from Nelly Vasquez Salazar. I guess Benny the Rat doesn't have time to go to Waukegan and pray over the grave of 6-year-old Evelyn Vasquez Salazar. He probably doesn't even have time to go to the website and see the smiling face of this adorable child and be confronted with the evil that his multi-billion-dollar scam inflicts on people. It's heartbreaking. But it's heartbreaking every time. You know, it wasn't Roman Catholics who let the 15-month-old die. Those were Protestant fundamentalists in Oregon. I don't know about the woman in Wisconsin, but she let her 11-year-old or maybe 9-year-old daughter die in a diabetic coma that was utterly preventable and treatable. The Vicar of Christ on Earth doesn't have time for Evelyn Vasquez Salazar. The man who walks in the shoes of the fisherman doesn't have time to absolve Nelly Vasquez Salazar. But he has time for dog and pony shows at Yankee Stadium and St. Patrick's Cathedral and Washington Nationals Park. But he does not have time to do the work of the brown-skinned Nazarene carpenter. Suffer the children to come unto me. Suffer the children to come unto me. Well, see, that justifies Benny not going to Waukegan, because the children have to come unto him. He doesn't have to come unto the children. And just like thousands upon thousands of others, God Almighty, how the children do suffer at the hands of Ratzinger and his church. How the children do suffer. They suffer from anal rape, oral rape, vaginal rape. They suffer from bone-crunching poverty. They suffer from ignorance and superstition and want of education. They suffer dying horrible deaths from HIV/AIDS. All in the name of a man who said the greatest commandment is to love thy neighbor as thyself, second only to loving God. Because I think Yeshua understood that when you love your neighbor as yourself, you are loving God. God Almighty. No wonder he doesn't eat in front of people. Nobody likes to see anyone tear at raw human flesh. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, well, I don't know if you were talking on just on that what you're talking about, if you also included this whole thing going down in Texas.
Oh, you mean with the capital punishment thing?
No. The one where they've gone and taken all the children.
Oh, no, I hadn't gotten around to that yet, but yeah, it fits.
Well, I was sitting there listening to all that, and you know what? It just all of a sudden hit me. It's like, you know, first of all, the thing that bugs me the most is they cannot find the 16-year-old girl, which makes me begin to wonder, is there a 16-year-old girl? And
found the man, right?
Well, they don't know. The way they're talking, you know what I mean? It's like...
Well, no, I mean, they found a guy and his alibi holds up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the guy they were talking about, and this guy, like, he's in another state. But the thing that bugged me the most is I'm sitting there going, you know what? If this Texas Attorney General is that good, then my question is, sir, when are we going to start going after the snake handlers' families and their churches? You know, it's real nice to go after what would be called a cult. But let's see you go after the Baptist, some divisions of the Baptist church.
Well, yeah,
where they play with snakes and children.
Yeah, where did this woman in Waukegan get the idea that sleepwalking is demon possession? Did she and her mama just cook that up together, or did they have a little help in the church?
Well, you know, you always hear about some of these stories where, you know, well, they've had an exorcism. Unfortunately, the person died. It's like, well, yeah, when you set that 500-pound rock on their chest, it did chase the demon out, also chase the breath and the blood out, too.
I know.
That's the one where you want to tell them, you know what, we really don't believe in capital punishment, but we're going to kill you, but you've got an out. When you go up and you talk to God, if he says we're wrong, have him send you back.
And everything will be all better.
Yeah. And we'll know we were wrong. You just go ahead and do that. But you know what I mean? When I heard this story, I'm sitting there going, they've essentially gone in and taken 400 children on a word of a phone call that's from somebody they can't even prove exists. I mean, for all we know, this is the local Baptist minister's daughter calling. You know, he's going, well, we don't like them. So, honey, why don't you call in and tell them you've been abused? Then when I try to get hold of you, hang up real quick. I mean, it could be.
Well, it could be that. It could be anything. It could be prank phone calls on a Friday night.
But there's no way of knowing. One up in Oregon. I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, I don't think the government involves in some places. But I, you know, with these ones where we have kids who are dying when it's something they can easily be cured of. I mean, go arrest the child. The child's now under protective custody. We're taking him to the hospital.
There's an old legal principle, Luke. In loco parentis, and that says that the state, in the absence of competent parenting, has a duty to act in the best interest of children.
Like when they're 18, if they want to do something stupid, that's their right.
Exactly.
But until they're 18, we all have a fundamental duty to protect children even from their parents. That's why you take, if you saw a car sitting there with a baby in it, and it's 180 degrees or whatever, and the wind's rolled up, you know what? I'm gonna break a window.
Yeah.
I'll pay for it if I have to, but I'm gonna break the window.
Yeah, because in that circumstance, you can't go running around looking for a cop to do it for you.
Oh.
I don't care if mama gets arrested. I care if the child lives.
Yeah. You know, I'm gonna go up and I'm gonna find me a rock, a tire iron, whatever, and I'm gonna break me a window. And if I have to get fined, I'll pay a fine. Judge says I have to go sit in the hoose cow for a weekend. I'll go sit in the hoose cow for a weekend.
You know, yeah, that's worth 30 days in the county.
But sure. You know what I mean? It's one of these things where the more I hear about this story, the more it sounds like that this community just decided we don't like them.
It could, but
don't get me wrong. If what happened, and they need to be, some people need to be arrested. But some of the things about this are sounding really weird. And that's strange thing about this group.
Yeah, it is. And the thing is, I don't think anybody would have been as nervous about it had it not been for the previous conviction of Warren Jeffs.
Yeah.
Because basically, his defense was, God told me to. And he stood convicted of, you know, arranging marriages for between children and grown men, and marriages between people who were of too close a blood kin to not qualify as incest. And Lord.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm a little bit leery of these things, Luke, because anytime you give a sect the opportunity to cry, "Oh, we're being religiously persecuted," there's going to be a bunch of weak-minded people who gravitate to it.
Well, but at the same time, you know, it just seems, you know, it's one of those things, you know, if you want to say that this happened to this one girl, fine, you go in there and you arrest the right people, but what is your right to go in there and grab 400 kids? You know, I mean, they aren't out there teaching them to throw knives at each other.
Yeah, and I pity the legal system in this because it's almost unmanageable. Well, it's not almost. It is utterly unmanageable for the lawyers involved. You know what? I wonder if there's 400 lawyers in that neck of the woods of Texas.
They were talking about it. So that's going to be. So it's going to virtually almost cripple the Texas judicial system. You know what I mean? They're going to have to do so much stuff. Okay, let me get. Can I get on to a couple other things?
Oh sure, got, sure. You set them up, knock them down.
All right. Let's see. I think there's a thing the other night about a bomber with no pilot.
I saw that.
Isn't that fun? Now they're wanting to mechanize the whole military, where essentially we aren't going to need soldiers. They're going to be somebody's going to be sitting there with his Wii playing paddle.
And you know, to the extent that we use these predator drones, that's what we're doing with Afghanistan, Iraq.
I tell you one thing. Only thing I hope is, boy, they better put some damn good encryption on that stuff. Because if I'm over in the Middle East, I'm just sending my boys to computer camp, telling them I want you all to figure out how to break into back into a computer.
And considering the fact that it's the Pentagon, probably a 10-year-old could hack into it. Shall we play a game?
Candies, are we? Well, the article I sent you, the one about Al Franken.
Yes.
And the more I got reading it, the more I was sitting there going, I don't care one way or the other. I want Al Franken to win for one reason and one reason only.
And this is?
I want to see Bill O'Reilly stroke out on TV.
He would.
I figured there's one of three things will happen. One, he'll stroke out on TV. Two, we'll get to see what you've always heard about but never really seen, a good old-fashioned conniption fit. Or three, I figure his head will just literally explode.
That sure would be messy, but it would be fun to watch.
Yeah. Well,
speaking of conniptions, though,
mm-hmm.
I got something from a listener from over at Huffington Post, and I haven't had enough time to delve into it far enough to see what the reality level is. Apparently, someone put out a Wall Street Journal parody.
Oh God!
And you know how the Wall Street Journal? Well, they can't afford photographers. Everything's line drawings. Well, it's got a drawing with a topless Ann Coulter. And the way it's being reported, well, the headline says, Wall Street Journal parody with a topless Ann Coulter rankles Murdoch in real life and on YouTube. Speaking of stroking out and making a head explode, I can't think of anybody whose head I'd rather see explode than Rupert Murdoch's, even Bill O.
Oh, I can. He sits behind the golden microphone.
Oh, well, okay. I don't know. It's still a pretty close call. But then again, there's another Murdoch to step in and take Rupert's place, and probably just as bad or maybe worse.
Yeah, well, yeah. But what was the other one? I had one other thing I was going to bring up. Hang on, I'll think real quick. Slam the head a few times. I'll think about it in a second. I'm sure as soon as I hang up, I'll think of it.
Well, when it does hit, or if you get a chance to see it, mm-hmm. It's called My Wall Street Journal.
Oh, gosh.
And
it's one of those. Oh, I know what it was. Have you ever seen a more blatant example of pure egoism. Did you get to read the article in the New York Times Magazine on Mr. Matthews?
Yes.
On Tweety Bird.
Yes.
There's an ego out for a walk.
Let's talk about our connection with the common man while we sit in our
$5 million vacation home in Nantucket.
Precisely.
Right down the street from Tim Russert, and right down the street.
You know what
there
blows my mind? I've sat around and wondered, Luke, how much these guys get paid. Because it's not like it's government and they have to tell us or anything. Can you imagine that Chris Matthews gets $5 million vacation home in Nantucket money for doing what he does?
I'm surprised he doesn't have to pay them to get on air.
I mean, under that circumstance, no offense, but I'm guessing I'm worth a couple of billion. Not that I'm an egomaniac or anything, but the bar has been set so damn low with what he does that, you know, it just has to be. Russert?
I know. It's one of those things. It's like I saw somebody talking about or writing about him one time said, you know, Russert seems to think he's his dad. He seems to think he's this common man who, you know, who did pull himself up by his bootstraps. And it's like, no, Jack Welch drove over and opened the door and said, get in. Said you didn't climb up the ladder. Somebody dropped you a line and towed you up. So you know it's one of the things where you're sitting there watching it go. You know, some of these things where, you know, the other weekend where Russert was on there, and I think it was Hillary was on. He was berating her about the fact that, you know, her and Bill made $10 million over 10 years, or $100 million over 10 years. And I'm sitting there going, Tim, that's less than you make.
You know,
I wouldn't doubt Tim's making 15, probably to 20 million a year.
Rubber brick time, honest to God.
But you know what I mean?
It makes me nuts just thinking about this stuff.
And then, oh, by the way, we don't have enough money to keep our foreign bureaus open, do we?
Wonder why.
When you sit there and you start counting up, just look on an average day and start counting up how much each person's making. And I don't begrudge somebody making money. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Every bone in my body has a greed factor.
Yeah, I don't know if you tuned in this early, but it astonished me. Did you watch the pageant last night? Admittedly, I did not.
I watched a little bit of it, but I've got a different take on it. But go ahead.
Well, no, just the idea that George Snuffleupagus is now letting Sean Hannity write questions for him just blows me away.
Well, I tell you, the one that got to me, and I'm sorry, it just bugs me, is watching this all today, watching everybody wringing their hands. Oh, they treated Barack awful. I'm sitting there going, congratulations, it was your all's turn. Hillary's had it for 3 months. You got it one night, and you all are screaming like everything. You know, how would you like it if somebody looked up your, when you release your records, first thing they go is, well, gee, where were you and Bill and Monica were getting it on? I mean, that was a question they asked at a debate, not directly in that respect, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I believe Susan said earlier it took almost the entire program before there anything of substance came out.
But like I say, if you sat and watched, what was the one a few months ago? The one with our friend Tweety Bird.
Yeah.
Where was he asking questions? He was just mostly sitting there making snarky comments during his.
That's true. Yeah, I know. That notion passed my mind a little for a couple of minutes there, Luke. Because
we talked about it once before. I said, you know, when the Obama people finally get the, you know, when it gets to the general election and they all of a sudden we love John McCain, all of them are going to go, where'd y'all go? Where are our friends?
But the standard isn't, the bar wasn't set very high for this debate, this pageant in the first place.
Oh, no, I know. You know how it is. It's like the debates all, you know, for the past few years. It's like, guys, we would actually like to have a debate. Maybe if we got the people, what were their names? The League of Women Voters. You know, they actually had debates. They didn't have, you know, these, like you said, these beauty pageants, you know, where you sit out there and we're going to ask you, you know, the questions we ask the Miss America contestants. You know, what tree would you be? You know. It's sort of like,
they save that question for when Baba Wawa gets to interview them.
You know, when it's the hour thing before the Oscars or whatever, and she wants to interview you, good. you know, that's fine. You know, that's when we'll ask those questions. It's like, you guys, did anybody ever tell you, you know, on that little badge you all wearing around, do you see the words news division? Most of them probably don't. Most of them now say entertainment division.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, who, you know, that's, and that's who's running.
Worry about your.
But is it, honest to God, though, I mean, I saw the Obama question about, you know, do you love the flag? In fact, I'll probably run the audio here in a little bit.
Well, I mean,
is that something that's really on the mind of Pennsylvanians?
No, but hey, you go back and, you know, I remember, you know, when they were asking that same question years, how far back? Remember when they were asking things like that to Dukakis?
Yeah. Oh, well, the Bernie Shaw rape question? Oh, I remember that very well.
I mean, to that day, I still think somebody should have went up there and the first thing just slapped Bernie Shaw as hard as you could. So, Bernie, what'd you do when it happened to your wife?
Well, exactly.
If you're going to ask that question, you better have already answered it. You know,
and, of course, you know, last night I did bail out early, and I did do a little.
I got home early. And turned it on, and just turned it on just in time to hear you. But that's okay. If you don't feel good, you don't feel good. You know how that is.
But I did a little bit of. I sat in the living room, did a little clicker work, and I went across. You know, Mo Rocca? Is there anybody left in the country who thinks Mo Rocca's funny? Oh, by the way, I'm informed by our news ninja Gene that the next pageant, the questions will be presented in the form of interpretive dance.
Don't look at me. I'm at the point now. I believe we were asking to give David Letterman and Jay Leno to do it.
They're John Stewart.
I say at least I'd be honest about it. You know, we're coming at this from the comedy division. It's like, hey, great.
Yeah, Lewis Black. Yeah, why not?
I mean, you know, hell, it's like I say, we'll get Colbert and Stewart and Leno and Letterman and Ferguson and Conan. Shoot, we'll just have a good old party with this. You know,
I get tired of these correspondence dinners and stuff because they're such an insult to the American people. Last night,
you know, the thing is, though, you wish more and more that they would put it out in prime time because, you know what, we want to see how you all like this.
Well, this was in prime time.
But I mean, they ought to require them to carry it on CNN.
Oh, okay, yeah, or put it on the current network.
They ought to be required to carry it all across the board. You know, here's what kind of idiots we act like. You know, you still wonder how many people saw George Bush do his hunt for the WMDs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in this case, Dick Cheney got up, and of course we've learned in the last week and a half that he was openly discussing torture before the Iraq attack even took place. But last night he got up and cracked jokes after Mo Rocca's thing, or before it, or whatever. Mo Rocca.
I tell you, if you want to hear something, I heard something today that was really interesting. Was out and turned on Fresh Air, and like the last 15 minutes of the show, she had on Lincoln Chafee, and he was talking about when just after the Supreme Court decision in 2000, that the next day. Him and the other four at that time, he said there were five moderate Republicans. You know, him and Specter, Snow, and I can't remember who the other two were, but they had lunch with Dick Cheney. And he said Dick Cheney essentially told him that day, you know, that what we told everybody in the election was a farce. Here's what we're going to do. You know, everything we said. Everything that he said that day, he said, went totally against what they campaigned on. And like I said, this was the day after Bush v. Gore was decided. As I say, if you get a chance, you need to probably go over to their website. I'm sure it's probably up on their thing to listen to. But it was just fascinating in that respect. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah,
it's like this was all planned. I mean, you know, people say, "Well, 9/11 changed things." Said, "Hell no, this was planned before 9/11." I mean, they had already decided to do these things. The 9/11 just made it go quicker. You know, it just changed their timetable.
Yep.
But, you know, these things were all planned. It's just the further they went, the faster it went, because at 9/11 they could do things that, you know, they could make people, you know. He said the thing that amazed him was when they had this thing recently, when they had the Iran thing about naming their guards as a terrorist organization. He said, what was it, like 70 to 28 or whatever? He said he was amazed at how fast the Democrats caved on it. He said he didn't think, he thought it'd be a 50-50.
Yeah, they hadn't caved in before their shorts. They caved in before their shorts were wet.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Hey, look, well, good to hear from you, brother.
Get some more of the people on.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right. You have a good evening.
Take care now.
Bye.
Obviously, dear leader couldn't be at the correspondents' dinner last night because he was busy throwing the birthday party for the Pope who wasn't there. That still just makes the marbles rattle around in my skull, but it was what it was. So Dick Cheney had to do stand-up duty, and he did the intro from O'Rourke. Seriously, does any, honest to God, does anybody think he's funny? Maybe I'm just missing it. I mean, I love Lewis Black, love Jon Stewart, you know. Even Keith Olbermann can be funny. But Mo Rocca? Every time I see him, M-O-R-O-C-C-A, I'm thinking it should be M-O-R-O-N-N-A, Mo Rana. It's just, bleh. So Dick Cheney gets up and does stand up, and we've got some clips here. And he asked Lynn, his wife, the pornographer, remember Sisters? Asked her if it bothered her that people called him Darth Vader. And she said, no, dear, it humanizes you. Yeah. But, of course, there was a bunch of other snide BS. Let's try this one on for size. What the heck?
Barack Obama and I have had our disagreements, and frankly, I do wish he'd keep these things in the family. For example, I keep telling him it's time to start thinking about a choice for vice president. He says he'll find a running mate just as soon as he's got himself a new pastor.
Put him thump. He'll be here all week. Like try the veal.
I guess my cousin Barack has sat through some mighty riveting sermons over the years. If he gets elected, you're not going to want to miss those Washington prayer breakfasts.
How can it compare to the ones that your boss has had, you know, with the snakes and stuff, Dick? This man. But then again, you know, they say Hitler loved dogs. So who's to say that Dick Cheney can't get up and, you know, yuck it up with the hoi polloi? Ugh. Back to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Bob? How you doing, man?
No, what's going on, Gary?
Not much, man. You are right. I was thinking about Morocco. That guy is not funny. He's never been funny. I don't understand why people think he's so funny.
It's like he's trying to do the Letterman shtick, and it just doesn't stick.
Well, I used to watch him on a Daily Show. He tries to be sarcastic, but it just doesn't work, like with Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart. It's just, I don't get it, man. He's not funny.
But you know, when I guess that's all the correspondents could get. Pathetic.
So I know you didn't watch the debate last night, so I'm not going to even ask you that.
Well, no, I didn't, but I've read enough to... I feel so nauseated, it's almost like I was there.
Yeah. It was, I'm kind of worried. I'm not really a writer, but I'm getting so pissed off with the media. I think I'm going to try to become a writer. I'm actually working on a piece now. I'm going to see if I can get it posted on a friend's blog. It's called The Katrina of Debate. Because that thing last night, that's what it was. I mean, it really was like, it was a freak show. It really, I think we've hit rock bottom in terms of the media.
Don't say that. Don't say that, because they'll open the trap door and show you it goes even deeper.
Well, no, I'm not saying that we got down to the lower depths of hell, but I'm saying I think we've pretty much hit the rock bottom right now.
Well, again, like I said, when George Snuffleupagus is letting the Sean Hannity write his questions for him,
One of the questions, Bob, was this. This is the actual question last night. Randy Rose, listen to Randy Rose show, she pointed this out. And this one of the questions was, and I remember it because I watched it, and it says, does Reverend Wright love America as much as you do, Senator Obama? So those were one of the first questions, like the first questions.
And when did you stop beating your wife?
Then the next one was, you know, you don't wear these lapel pins.
Where's your pin?
Patriotic or something. It was, that was the second, like the third one. Then he went to about seven.
Oh, I've got the audio of that one where the one, you know, our firefighters and our policemen wear the flag, and our troops fighting for our freedom wear the flag. Why won't you wear a flag, Senator Obama?
But the only thing I don't understand, I think he does this on purpose, Obama. I know he saw that neither one of George or Stephanopoulos, I can't even say his name, and Charles Gist had on lapels. Nor did Hillary. Yes. Now, I'm thinking to myself, Obama's just like not, I think he knew he just won't go there. It's so like this, he just basically kept saying, this is not really what the American people care about.
Well, I heard the answer, and you know, I don't know if he was trying to be home, the homespun, or you know, at ease with the common touch or whatever. But he kind of stammered his way through it, and I was bothered by that because Gary, the automatic answer to me, and I guess again, this is why I'm not running for president and he is I love the flag. But you know what? I love what the flag stands for a lot more. And then you launch into all the evil stuff that the Bush administration has done to the Constitution for the last 8 years. But for that, questioner, ABC had to go find that questioner. I'm convinced of it in my soul because, you know, he was right about the people in the small towns who have been left behind by globalization and free trade agreements and who then, you know, cling to stuff that can't save them. He was absolutely right about all of that. And I can't imagine that the kind of questions that were put out there are the real questions that Pennsylvanians want answered. I mean, do you?
No, but I can tell you what I can see what's going on. I can see what he's doing to some degree, and I don't know if it's... I can't really argue with him because it's worked so far, but I'm pretty sure that you're familiar with the book The Art of War.
Oh, yes.
Yes. This is really kind of like classic, you know, classic Art of War stuff. You let your opponent expend all their energies, and you, I'm trying to think how to would say it, but basically, you let them fight, you know, your battles, let them fight your battles for you. And I really kind of think that what Obama was counting on last night, I let them make such a fool of themselves with these stupid questions and not so much get confrontational with them, they'll focus on my confrontation, and therefore, people probably won't focus so much on how dumb these questions are. Now, I could be wrong, but as I watched him over the debates on these last couple of days when these questions come up, granted, I don't think he answers them as greatly as possible. I think what he does try to do is back away from it and just let these people kind of expose really who they are. And I think that's what he's trying to do. And I think there's one other thing that somebody mentioned today, I noticed as an African male, is that there's a thing that a lot of people won't talk about, but there's something about being an angry black man. And there's this thing that I think that he may be conscious of, that if he comes off angry or disturbed...
Oh, that he'll scare the white people half to death?
Exactly, half to death. But if he plays the passive, you know, kind of like, go ahead, you know, take the Jesus route, turn the other cheek, let your enemy put on your footstool, let them reap the coals on their heads, then people see. And I have to tell you, I went to the ABC commentaries last night. I've never seen this on the blogs and stuff. 90% of the blogs, the comments, they were ripping ABC to death. I mean, I've never seen this much backlash from the people who are writing it.
Even the Washington Post TV critic just had a hissy in the paper this morning. But still, you know, I come in and I fire stuff up and I look and I see. And what do I... Hillary wins debate, but barely. Obama battered and bruised. It makes it sound like it was the Thriller in Manila. And, you know, poor Obama over in the corner doing the rope-a-dope.
It was not that. It was not as bad as they said it was. I think what it came off was he looked defensive, obviously, and he was annoyed. But he was annoyed because of the questions that were so dumb and stupid. And he kind of, like you said, he didn't answer a lot of them and didn't take shots at Mrs. Clinton, which I thought, you know, I would have, you know, the type of person I am, I couldn't be a president because I would have taken every shot that I could have at a person. But he didn't do that, and I think he's betting on, look, I can't attack Mrs. Clinton, number one. I can't be the angry black male. Number two, and then some people may not agree with this, but if I attack her and being a woman, I may engage in the situation where I may start pissing off some of her.
Oh, yeah, and then the Hilarians will go into full-on hissy.
Yeah. See, the Clinton people, if he's the nominee, which I still think he's going to be the nominee, they really have no excuse now not to vote for the guy, especially after last night. Last night's debate, if you watched it, Bob, this is the first time I've seen it. Basically, Hillary Clinton, it's basically the Republicans were debating Barack Obama, and Mrs. Clinton was just there. That's basically what that debate was about. She kind of chimed in when they were beating on him, because obviously, you know, she's down and she's trying to do that. But basically, this debate was the Republican attack machine taking him on, full frontal assault. If you watch that debate, anybody who watched it will tell you, the first seven or so questions, Republican talking points. It seems to me the contrast was supposed to be him and Ms. Clinton. It was about you against the Republican.
Well, when you're asked, is it a black thing? Is that why the Reverend Wright business won't go away? I mean, I know no other way than just to ask it. I mean, because nobody's out there asking John McCain another word about Reverend Hagee.
The reason why they're hitting him so much with the Reverend Wright thing, because every poll shows it ain't sticking. People are frustrated with it. They don't care. Reverend Wright didn't send our troops into, you know, Iraq and all this other kind of stuff. And the pollsters, the media people, cannot understand why this guy can't be brought down. Why won't his poll numbers against McCain come down? This guy is getting attacked from Hillary Clinton and John McCain, and he's still up 2 points in the polls nationally. They're frightened, Bob. I'm telling you, they're frightened. And all of a sudden, you know.
But the thing that just bugs the stuffing out of me, Gary, is that it's only a 2-point difference. I mean, and look, I want to be equal. I want to be, you know, the fair here. It just blows me away that there's not a 10-point difference between Hillary and McCain or between Obama and McCain. What in the world is going on?
Well, what do you mean? Like, are you saying that Obama and Hillary should be up 10 points on McCain?
Yes.
No, I see it the opposite way. McCain is not even being attacked right now. Think about this, Bob. You have a three-way race right now. You got three opponents. You have McCain's pretty much not even being questioned. He's pretty much being set up on a plateau, and he's sitting there just riding his wave, and, you know, they're throwing doves and flowers at him. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton and Barack is getting knife assaults, and they're still leading in the polls against this guy. That's why I keep saying.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. I can dig that approach,
yes.
But what scares me, because this is the background that I approach it with, Gary, is that we know that there's still a bunch of dummied up election machines out there.
Yeah, yeah.
We know that there's, you know, Diebold and all that crowd are still going to be able to fool around with the results. And so it plays to a situation, it plays to a 52-48 election, because those things are flippable easily. And McCain is getting a pass from the media, but what I suspect is that nothing, where the media are concerned, it's not going to change after the conventions. That even when it's head-to-head McCain-Obama or McCain-Clinton, he's still going to be sitting on that pedestal. Like you said, you know, the they keep hammering the right thing because the right thing won't stick. Well, the John Hagee thing didn't stick, but they're not hammering that.
Well, that's up to the Democrats. I mean, the Democrats could turn around. You know, if you know, I'm not necessarily, I don't like James Carville's tactics personally, but I can tell you, if I was the Obama people, if he becomes a nominee, as soon as he becomes a nominee, you go get that guy. You go, because you got to have a snake in your box. That's how I see it. And I think what's going to have to happen, the Democrats may just like Hillary's right.
Well, okay, you said if you were advising Obama's people, what's wrong with coming out with the very next Reverend Wright question and say, tell you what, here's what I want to do. I want to take Reverend Wright, who served above and beyond the call as a United States Marine, then transferred, then became a corpsman, and served his country that way, and has served his community at Trinity. I want to take him, and who is by no means, by no stretch of the imagination, a multimillionaire. I will have Obama say, I will continue this discussion as long as you want to have it, as long as we are discussing Reverend Wright side by side with multimillionaire televangelist Reverend Hagee, who is John McCain's spiritual advisor. And say something like, you know, I didn't seek Reverend Wright's endorsement, but McCain went out looking for Hagee's.
I think we'll have time. I think that time will be coming. I think that time will be coming. I think right now what's happening with him, because, you know, the thing is this, prior to this whole kitchen sink thing that I guess the Clinton campaign said they're doing right now, this negative campaigning against him, Obama was up, what, like 18 points nationally over McCain. And to me, I've always said that that's where he's really going to probably end up tracking. Overall, and that's the same thing with the Democrats. But what's going to happen is once, if Obama, again, caveat, if Obama becomes a nominee, you're going to have the Hillary effect, where the people from the Hillary campaign is going to push into Obama. Right now, there won't be any doubt anymore. He's a Democratic nominee. He's going to get a big bump from that. There's going to be a lot of positive. I mean, that convention this year, if he gives some major speeches at the convention, all this other stuff, there's just going to be a lot of goodwill going toward us. Plus, the economy and everything else is not going to change, and Iraq is not going to change. The question only question I see right now that we're going to have with this whole situation is what the media is going to try to decide to do. They're really going to start going after the guy and try to cast character assassinate him like they did last night. Then yes, there could be a possible problem. But from what I'm seeing, the American people seem to keep throwing a knife at the media and not really at Obama. And that's what kind of keeps me a little hopeful in this whole process. I think, though, the people who are saying, well, he needs to fight a lot more, I think they really have to understand he is a black man, and he does have to, you know, kind of tread on a certain kind of waters, a certain kind of way. He's not the most usual candidate we've had in the last couple of years, so don't expect the most usual kind of campaign. I mean, does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I'm just having to overcome a lot of native cynicism and a lot of native suspicion and a lot of native fear, Gary. I guess, what was it, 2-3 nights ago, I played that audio clip of Joe Lieberman appearing on Judge Napolitano's Fox radio program, where Napolitano asked him, is Barack Obama a Marxist? And Lieberman said, that's a very good question. Okay. Well, a day later, I look over and I see that Karl Rove has done the same thing. Here's the quote. I don't find a lot of people in rural America. I certainly don't find the dominant view to be, I'm so bitter that I'm going to hold on to my gun, or I'm going to, you know, it was almost Marxian in this, they cling to their religion. I mean, you know, it's sort of like it's the opiate of the masses.
Somebody came with a new word that I never heard of called Afro-Linnaeus, something like that. It was Afro-Marxist. I don't know if it was.
I'm writing that one down, because that's going on the Scrabble board just as quick as we play.
Afro-Linnaeus.
Afro-Marxist?
Yes. I don't know who it was.
Does that mean that like a communist with like one of the big old like Dr. J Afros? I mean,
it's like when they took the word fascism and
yeah. Oh, Islamofascism. Sure.
Islamofascism.
Right. Oh, that's just natural. Yeah. Afro-Marxism, Islamofascism. Oh, whatever could be next.
Yeah. So do you think, what I was talking about earlier about the Carville thing, do you think the Democrats should really have a machine in place to start saying, okay, we're going to go after Hagee and all these totally stupid ideas or stupid things that the American people don't care about, and expose John McCain and his links to them the way they're doing Obama?
Well, okay, let me do this by way of example, Gary. In the 1992 campaign, in which Carville was instrumental. George H.W. Bush was all set to wear Bill Clinton out about womanizing. Okay? And I mean, this is all documented. And the Clinton campaign went quietly to the Bush campaign and said, you play that card, and we're going to beat you over the head with George H.W. Bush's mistress of many, many years. Okay? We're just telling you. We can talk about the issues, or we can talk about that. But if you choose to talk about that, we are going to beat you to pieces.
Well, you know what? Obama did something this week that I think is the same strategy, and it's what he did. He went, and you probably heard about this. You know, he said that one of the first things he would do is appoint an attorney general to look into the crimes of the Bush administration.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that was a preemptive strike against the Republicans, saying, look, the new sheriff coming in town, all you rats that are sitting there in Washington, you look cozy thing, better get out of there now. Don't try to entrench yourselves and think that you can hold court. Or do you think he was just talking about, I mean, you think he was just talking to a blogger?
I saw the whole quote, Gary, and it didn't come across to me as there's a new sheriff in town and I'm going to kick ass and take names. Because the end of the quote has him sort of equivocating, if you will, and saying, you know, if, of course, there's been a crime, then, of course, we would have to, yada, or maybe, and you know, I think the line was about, you know, we need to make determinations as to whether a crime was committed or whether this was just bad policy. So I didn't see it as anything, as being that stern.
But why even say it?
Why even say it?
Did they ask him the question, or why would they even bring it up?
If you're asked the question, you got to answer something. And if you get real waffly on that question out of the gate, you're going to piss off a whole lot of people, just like me.
The reason why I'm saying that, because which I didn't mention was something I've been kind of watching a little bit too. I actually think the cards the Democrats are going to play, and I think that it's not being talked about a lot. I actually think they're going to put the threat of impeachment on the table during the course of this election. Now, every Democrat person, oh, no, they're not going to do that. But listen to statements that I've been watching with Harry Waxman and what's the other guy? What's the other person?
Conyers,
who has said, he said we're moving forward with it, obviously, right now, is that I actually think there's something going on that they figure, and particularly now that, you know, it's coming out that, you know, that they really are rattling this gum with Iran, is that I think Democrats are going to try to launch some preemptive strike against
them. Well, let me offer you a couple of thoughts on that whole scenario, if I may. One, I don't think this was about the Bush administration so much as it was about Hillary, because one of the things that Bill Clinton did, and to those, and I think this was an answer directed to those who know the history. This is not to this was not an answer directed to people who just don't care about the issue, because there's a lot of liberals and progressives and decent people for whom the rule of law in this matter is significant. So what you get is an answer that distinguishes how Barack Obama wants to go forward from how Bill Clinton went forward, because once Bill Clinton became president in January of 1993, he shut down the Iran-Contra investigation. He shut it down. And he didn't let investigations of the filth and the slime of the George H.W. Bush administration go forward. It was, in effect, an attempt on his part, as I understand it, to sort of reach across the aisle and say, listen, we got work to do, let's go forward.
Yeah.
The past is the past. So he's putting a level of separation between him and Hillary on that, because, you know, the presumption is Hillary will do what Bill did. Okay. Now, the other thing where this sort of thing is concerned is to take into account the fact that the only way, there's nothing that says criminal charges cannot be brought against an ex-president or an ex-secretary of state or an ex-vice president or any of that.
No statute of limitations on war crimes.
Right, well, and any number of other violations as well. So, the only way that you can preempt any of that is a bunch of pardons. Okay? So if Bush is pardoned, or if he gives Cheney and Wolfowitz and Adelman and Rumsfeld and that whole crowd pardons on the way out the door, then he is, by definition, trashing the Republican Party for the next election. And it might have represented an attempt to sort of put the bug in the air out there and make them think that they're going to have to consider some sort of remedial action, which would poison the well with the American voters. And I guess that's real deep background kind of stuff, but those were the two things that I got out of it in the main.
Yeah, I'm thinking that something's going on. I just gut feeling about this. The Democrats are probably going to try to make a move.
Because it plays back into your assertion of the tightrope that Barack Obama has to walk in terms of the point at which he crosses the line and turns into the angry, scary black guy. Because he can't do, frankly. And this is by no means a criticism. It's just a comment on. It's more of a comment on the racist nature of our country. He can't get all John Wayne's and say, "Fill your hands, you sons of bitches."
Well, I to some degree, yes. But again, in art of war, you mash your strength into the appropriate time.
And you pick the ground.
You pick the ground, and this is what I'm saying. The reason why I'm kind of a little curious about this, because just like I said, I've read that book a number of times and going through it. I see a lot of this in this campaign. The reason why I say this, it's the ultimate tactical move for him to say, okay, his whole theme is it's going to be change in Washington. You know, we're going to, you know, move this old Washington out and blah, 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 blah. So if he plays that card, doesn't it give him some credibility that, no, this guy is serious about making change, and he's willing to go all the way to do it? That's really what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent that's applicable. Yeah,
I'm not saying that he'll make that move, but
and he had to do it in a subtle fashion so as not to scare people. Boy, that just drives me nuts.
But the fact of the matter is, he at least was willing to put it on the table. Now, like Pelosi said, it's off the table. To me, impeachment is never off the table when you're president.
But it's also worth remembering that when George Bush is out of office, it's no longer, I mean, I guess you could have retroactive impeachment, but at that point in time, it's a lot simpler, and you just tell your attorney general, you know, put the case together and indict the man.
Yeah. Well, to me, impeachment's never off the table. It's on the front desk of the president, looking him in the face every day.
Because he serves exactly. First and foremost the Constitution of the United States. Absolutely.
That's right. And that's where it should be all the time. And I don't want any politicians coming up saying impeachment's off the table. No, it's never off the table. And I hope, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think, I just have a feeling that if they find a segue with it, maybe a chance, just a chance, that they will try to play that card. But I'm kind of like you. I'm cynical because the Democrats have always been weak. They always, you know, just go down and hunker over and all this other kind of stuff. But what I see in Barack is a little bit different. He's not necessarily, he's kind of like a mask. I mean, he's a strong guy, but he comes up like this really kind of nice, going along kind of guy. But I think there's something still there that's a little deeper than what people are knowing. And I think it's just classic art of war to let your people perceive. Because look at the Hillary Clinton campaign. They thought this guy was going to be nobody. They thought he was nothing. And what did he do? What he did was he went behind their back, basically, created this organization. They said, you want to take the big state? We're going to go get the small state. He seems to out-strategize people in terms of the way he does things. So I kind of have this feeling that he's going to translate that to when we deal with the Republican Party. He's going to take that machine that won this primary, or if he wins it, and say, okay, now I won this primary. How do we win the general election? And I think a lot of people are going to do what they did before. They're going to underestimate him. He's young. He's inexperienced. Republicans are going to underestimate this guy, and they're going to think they can just rely on Jeremiah Wright and old tactics from the past. I'm 100% convinced they're going to have to come up with something better than Jeremiah Wright to win this election. campaign. They already know that they're going to play the race card. They know that. They've probably been strategizing about that for 2 years.
My guess is these people are so shameless, Gary. They're gonna roll out a new war with Iran, whether it's a bombing campaign that they think is going to be limited in scope, and they're going to hope that they can do the same thing with this election cycle that they did with the 2002 off-year election cycle. Remember when they said you don't roll out a new product in August? And the whole 2002 off-year elections were all about, Democrats won't protect America. Remember that?
Yep.
Well, if they've actually got the bombs falling, then, because remember, you've got to take the media into consideration, not as a neutral entity, but as a willing co-conspirator with the Republican National Committee.
Exactly, they are. I mean, last night when you see that thing, that was pretty much saying to you, everybody should watch it. You can watch CNN. I said this last time when I called. I said that the whole thing was they were attacking Hillary, they were being unfair to Hillary when this thing first started. And I told the Obama people that now they're going to start attacking him. I mean, they're not going to be fair to the Democrats. Meanwhile, McCain is going to skate free. We are on a fight from all fronts. I mean, this is all bullets coming from all angles at this point. And whoever the Democratic nominee was, Barack or Hillary, the media is not going to be on our side. I mean, that has to be understood going in. I mean, we can't just go and say, oh, make the media and complain about them, because then the media will totally turn on us. But what we can do is convince the American people that this is politics as usual, they're not focusing on issues, and hopefully get enough outrage like last night when people just, you know, they almost had a riot last night after that thing. I don't know if you know.
No.
Oh, yeah. You didn't see the clip. My mother told me about this because I turned it off. I didn't see the last end of it because I got sick of it. But what happened was the last commercial break, they were supposed to come back. They didn't come back. And I went on the web and I saw this clip, and they were showing that he was getting booed. They were getting visible, like, you know, confrontations from the audience. I mean, go on YouTube or something and check it out. They were jeering Charles Gibson from the audience. I mean, it's a Philly crowd, so you know how they are. But yes.
Well, maybe some of that audience showed up with the hope of actually hearing. Because, again, it goes back to what I said about the woman with the stupid flag question. You know, is that what's really on the mind of Pennsylvania voters? And if folks showed up, stood in line, went through the metal detectors, blah, 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 and sat there and put up with, you know, 58 minutes of flag questions and Jeremiah Wright and all the right-wing BS... Maybe they were a little bit disgusted by the end of the night.
And they jumped on Hillary, too. I don't make it sound like they jumped on Obama. They talked about the Bosnian thing. Okay, Hillary said, look, she owned up to it or whatever. But in the end, I said, you know, Obama could have, like, jumped on it, but he didn't. He said, look, we need to move past even that. We just need to just move past it. So they were just there just to just pretty much kill the Republicans, I mean, the Democrats. They didn't even ask a question, Bob, about health care, you know. And
no.
Clean coal. Mention your issue, which is, you know, your issue there with the mountaintop.
Oh, I'm into health care too. In light of the fact that I'm facing a gallbladder removal, I'm into health care.
Oh, okay, all right. I'm sorry, but I'll pray for you.
I appreciate it.
Even though I know you have a certain point of view, I still pray for you.
That's okay. Look, I'll take anything I can get.
But no, what I was going to say is that not. I lost my train of thought on that. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I was going to say that Clean Coal has been sponsoring all these debates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts. The one, what was it, Sunday night on CNN was brought to you by Clean Coal. All the CNN web pages about it. Clean Coal, go to americasfuture.org. Yada, yada, yada. And I so wish somebody would openly denounce that during one of these things, but, you know, it's impossible. You can't get in the way of the advertiser.
All right. Well, Bob, I'm going to let you go. I know you got other people, so I don't want
to... All right, Gary, we'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, man. Keep faith.
I'm trying. But, bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Gary calling from Maryland. I love the conversations that we have. I don't know how... I'm glad to know that maybe the audience was a little bit miffed last night at the end of that miserable pageant. God knows they had every right in the world to be. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm holding up, I reckon.
What was your symptom?
Oh, chest pain.
For the gallbladder?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've had mine out when I was 20-something. And you don't necessarily have to take that kind of medication they were talking about, because I don't.
Well, it could be worse. I had a very good friend who was getting a this is a horror story. I had a very good friend who was getting a needle biopsy of his liver.
Uh huh.
And the doc and just the words needle biopsy.
Yeah.
Make me just want to go into a corner and roll up into a fetal position and suck my thumb. But he was getting a needle biopsy of his liver, so the doctor takes the needle biopsy device, whatever it is, and, you know, cranks it back and sets it and everything, and puts it over, and bink, and he goes, damn, didn't go deep enough, because he didn't get his sample. So he reloads the thing and sets it to go deeper, puts it over the same hole he's just punctured before, presses the button, it shoots all the way through the liver, and pops his gallbladder like a balloon.
Oh, my gosh.
And they had to rush him to emergency surgery. So, you know, it could be worse, but me
well,
and...
Well, if you... the way they do now...
Laparoscopy.
I had the big, long incision, you know. But they have little tiny ones now for that.
Yeah, they do it laparoscopically where they fill you up with nitrogen gas and then...
And I don't know how big your hernia is. That won't be... it's according to how big it is, I guess, because I've had that too with mesh, and it's the recovery.
So
do they
just use a little bit of Windiscreen? Is that what they do? I mean, I don't know.
It's not Windiscreen. It's some kind of mesh. I've seen it. It's
well, like it's I said, I will I will count myself lucky if I get a swig of whiskey and an old rag to chomp on.
But anyway, I had to have mine done because I was. Nauseated all the time, and they thought I had back pain because mine hurt like in the back.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a cousin that had the chest pains like you, and once he had, and they said first that he had heart problems, and once he had that done, his gallbladder out, the chest pains went away.
I talked with my doc today, and he says, "Look, you know, there's nothing to indicate you got any heart problems at all."
Mm-hmm.
He said, you got one of the best-looking EKGs for a smoker I've ever seen.
All right.
But then I laid down on the table, and he started poking me here and there, and a couple of times I went, oh, don't do that again.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, this is so gallbladder.
Yeah.
And then he saw the hernia and went, well, that could be part of it, too. What it probably boils down to is I have abused my gastrointestinal system for a long time, mm-hmm. You know, with... the most recent case that brought a lot of this on being the fact that I sat in a restaurant Saturday evening in the wilds of Fairfax County, Virginia, and ordered a bowl of Thai curry and looked at the waiter and said, bring it to me like the locals eat it. He said, man, that's hot. I said, that's what I want.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got the little lecture about, you know, that may be how you like it, but that ain't how you're going to eat it no more. And you know, I told him, I said, you know, listen, I'm so crazy. I love hot stuff so much that I'll get up in the morning and go to the refrigerator and get the hot sauce out, you know, and just take a swig.
Well, it's supposed to be good for your sinuses.
Something better. But he said, well, you know, Bob, those days are over. You know, when I was a child, I ate as a child.
Yeah.
but when my gallbladder went south, I put away foolish things.
Well, when do you think you'll have it done?
I have no idea. I've got an ultrasound scheduled for tomorrow morning at 7:45. I don't understand the medical profession. Why does this crap have to be done at 7:45? Don't they know that there are people out there who work till 2 in the morning?
I know. Yeah, I hate it when you have to do the blood fasting, too.
Oh, that just...
Yeah.
The one that really pissed me off the most, pardon me, Juanita... But the one that did that the most was the starvation prior to a colonoscopy.
Oh, I hate that, drinking that stuff.
Well, and that was a real party, too.
That's my...
Yeah, you starve for 24 hours, and then somewhere along the way you start drinking that obnoxious stuff that smells like embalming fluid. And
a bunch of it.
Oh, well, they've gotten it down to where you don't have to drink so much. Yeah, that was that Go Lightly
really?
Stuff. Yeah, that Go Lightly gallon jug stuff.
That's about 10 years ago.
Well, the first one I did, I had to do that. The second one I had, it was just a little bottle of stuff, and now they've got a pill.
Well, I hope so.
Now, the end result is the same. I mean, the end result is the same. You're still chained to the bathroom. But you're not drinking that evil stuff. The other thing that's come a long way, and it's the problem is largely one of getting insurance companies to pay for it, they can do this all with an MRI now. And it's non-invasive because there's a significant, medically significant risk of colonic perforation when they're doing these things. If you're not, if your doctor's not real careful.
Oh yeah, that's the problem. Don't let anybody tell you can't be a problem because I know people have been messed up with it.
And I know that I don't
put your friend with the gallbladder.
I don't put my doctors at ease, I guess. But I remember when they were getting ready to drug me out of my mind for the last one, I just looked up and said, "Please don't kill me."
Just don't what?
Please don't kill me. because you know, one of the things that God knows Republicans never do, and Democrats don't do it nearly enough, is to point out, you know, we've got to have tort reform. Well, you can't be suing doctors. You have a greater risk at any time in any given year in this country of being killed as a result of medical negligence than you do of dying of a gunshot wound or being struck by lightning or both.
And also getting...
Or being hurt by a terrorist.
When you're at the hospital.
The hospital's a terrible place to be sick.
Infections hang around. So.
But it's worth putting that kind of stuff in perspective. I'm glad you brought this up. I'm not bemoaning my lot by any stretch of the imagination. But for all the time that the Bush administration has spent terrorizing the American people, Juanita, over some gang of dudes in a cave. 9,000-10,000 miles away.
Uh-huh.
You have a much greater chance of being hurt by your doctor.
Yeah.
Than by any terrorist.
Yeah. I should have been rich. Some of the doctors I had. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Sounded like it went dead.
No. I think you just hit a button there for a second. Or at least that's what my eardrum thought.
I did want to talk about the the pageant.
Yes.
I saw the first hour of it, and, you know, to me, I haven't liked Charles What's-His-Face for a long, long time. To me, I think he's worse than what's the guy that's on Sunday mornings?
Russert?
Russert, yeah.
Yeah.
He's just, I've seen him be such a jerk. And what can you expect out of people who ask Dennis Kucinich, did he see flying saucers, and does Hillary prefer pearls or diamonds? You know, they ask the most stupid questions of the Democrats. I don't think they do the same for the Republicans. But, it was just kept going on and on and on about Reverend, his preacher, and just went on and on and on about it. And, I don't know. I hope the crowd did boo him. I would like to see that, have to see that, because if, and also the one that was on Sunday, I got an email from people that were kind of behind it, and they were extremely disappointed with the questions because they weren't really that good either on that, you know, the one about the religion and all.
Sure.
And a lot of the questions, they said, if you were being interviewed for a job, they would be illegal, you know, for people to ask you about your religion and all.
Right.
But it wasn't anything that people wanted to ask about, really and truly.
Yeah, it wasn't anything. In other words, what you're saying is it wasn't anything that mattered?
Yeah, really. And this thing about his pastor, I mean, they just go on and on and on about it. I'll tell you something.
And that's what's kind of got me chapped, Juanita. Why are we going on about Reverend Wright when there's a million times as many things in print, no less, to ask Reverend Hagee about?
Right, right.
And I can't come down to any answer except one: race. Race.
Yep. And I also was kind of amused today on The View because they were talking about the debate, and what's her face?
Hasselbeck?
Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah.
Elizabeth said he needs to go to Iraq. He's never been to Iraq. And Barbara Walters is on there, and she's kind of amazing me lately. She says, well, Bush never went to Iraq either. And she finally said, well, he should have. And then she kept on about Barack. And then later on, she had to eat her words because she found somebody told her that he did go over there, I think in 2006 or 2007. So she kind of had to eat her words.
I've been trying to come up with a good name for her. The best I've gotten so far is Elizabeth Has No Brain.
But she does those little talking points because she's the one, when I was watching, when Edwards was still running, she was the one brought up about the haircut. She's the first one. And then you heard everybody else say it and about other things, you know, concerning him. So I like to watch it for that.
I think you're kind of identifying something, Juanita, and that is politicians are too careful. Because, for instance, the first time that somebody asked John Edwards about the haircut, he should have said, tell you what, call me back when you've got the details on Mitt Romney's haircut and we'll compare.
Yeah, right. I remember when John Kerry was running and they were talking about his $1,000 shirts. And I said, well, what about Bush and his $3,000 suits and his I forget how many $1,000 his boots cost. And they were made, the same man who made his made Obama's, Saddam Hussein. And I quite in one person with that. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and if that's a $3,000 suit,
people live it up too, you know.
I have actually walked by the shop of Georges de Paris in D.C., and if you get a $3,000 suit from Georges de Paris, you're buying like a repo. That guy charges $9,000, $10,000, $15,000 for
a
suit.
Well, George gets his from.
Georges de Paris,
England, I believe.
Well, he may have some bespokes from Savile Row, but the White House tailor is Georges de Paris of Washington.
Uh huh. Well, maybe that was before he got in the White House.
Well, remember when they busted George for the little telecommunication box in his suit?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It was Georges de Paris who came out and said, no, that is simply a function of the stitching.
Well, you know, have you noticed that those suits, when he wears them, his shoulders look like almost like a football player? And you know,
well, that's because of the flak jacket. He's such a coward, I guarantee you, that he wears a Kevlar jacket under his suits.
That's what I thought. Because his shoulders are not that broad. I've seen him.
No, he's scrawny. He's a wimp.
Yeah, but anyway, it's and then that torture thing is just driving me batty.
You mean because nobody will talk about it?
Right.
Because there hasn't been a grand jury convened. Jeez, I know.
I had a email where they wanted from Dean's brother.
Yeah, Jim. He's going to be on the show tomorrow night, by the way.
And anyway, it was to sign a petition to get her fired, her resign.
And that's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow night on the show.
Good.
Right at the very top of the show, by the way.
Good. Well, I hope so. But, you know, we just don't get our points across. I guess we're not devious enough. But But
we're not mean enough is what it boils down to. That's what I've been hollering all this time, that we have not figured out that you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Hell, we won't even bring a knife. We bring daisies.
Well.
But, yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, you're outstanding, Bob.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Be careful there. People might think you're a sycophant.
Yeah.
I know. Take care, Juanita.
You take care, too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we'll just roll on. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's me.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. I was a little surprised you didn't bring this up, so I just thought I'd mention it in the last bit of the program here. The FBI is expanding the circumstances that they can use to collect DNA now. All you have to be is picked up by a federal agent, and they get to take a sample of your DNA and put it in a big old criminal database,
I saw that.
Even though you haven't been convicted of anything yet, I guess the whole concept of innocent until proven guilty has just gone completely out the way. And everybody's trying to tell me, oh, it's just like taking fingerprints. I'm sorry, I didn't know they could determine my genetic background, what kind of diseases I might be susceptible to, who my parentage is. I didn't know they could do all that from a fingerprint.
That's mainly because they can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I know.
You're being sarcastic and I'm being wry. Tomorrow I'm going to be pumpernickel. That's the rap on me, is that I miss a lot of stuff because I love the conversations more. And that's why it's kind of you guys' job to bring up stuff if you think I'm missing it. Because odds are I may have seen it, but we may not get to it yet. But look, we're a fascist nation. This is, yes. I mean, I remember when the state police had their little fingerprint your child booth, and I'm such a civil libertarian that Agnes was going over there, I guess I'll get a fingerprint. Do we have to? Because I don't care how much they promise, those things went into a database somewhere. So that they've got, down the road, if they ever want to, they can.
We're not going to use it for that.
Oh, no, we never will. But this is the same outfit. This is the same administration that looked at the law that said you can't data mine, like we were talking about the other night, Vince. You can't data mine the American people. But they saw that law as meaning that they could hire it out done. So, no, they're not going to use those DNA. No, hell no, they'd never do that. No, these people, butter wouldn't melt in their mouth. They wouldn't say poop if they had a mouthful. Heck no. My rear end.
We believe them.
Right. Yeah. And I also believe in the Tooth Fairy, and Santa Claus,
and
the Easter Bunny, and leprechauns. Yeah. Unicorns, I believe. Yeah, unicorns too.
Don't forget the fairies.
Never. Tinkerbell's my particular favorite. We see a lot of Tinkerbell these days having, little children in the house.
Yeah, see them all over. I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was really important. It's been all over in the garden.
Speaking of incredibly important, have you seen the new Rand Corporation study that's out?
No, I have not.
According to a new study from Rand, I don't know if it's the Rand Corporation Foundation. It's Rand, okay? 300,000 U.S. troops are suffering from major depression or post-traumatic stress from serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Here's the other one. 320,000 received brain injuries, according to the new study.
File that under duh?
Yeah, well, wait. It gets better. Only about half have sought treatment.
Well, again, can we file that under duh?
Yeah, but when it comes up in your face. I mean, yeah, it for you, for me, for us, for horn listeners, liberals, decent people, progressives, Democrats, it's a duh.
And yet we're in the minority.
Right. Well, but for the lady who's concerned about whether Obama loves the flag enough, Well, you know, all those people who got those brain injuries and PTSD and everything, they were wearing a flag at the time they got the injury. Right?
Yep.
So, since they were wearing a flag, can we bother the goofy woman in Pennsylvania to actually give a damn about these people?
They've got to be plans. I cannot believe that's really what Pennsylvania voters are all... Like you were saying earlier, I can't believe that's what they all want. I mean...
Well, I'm losing my house, Senator Obama, but I'm losing my house. Can't do nothing about it. I'm living in a refrigerator box, but it would do me a hell of a lot of good if I just knew that you was wearing a flag pin.
Oh! Or that you renounced that awful, awful, awful reverend of yours.
No, I don't want you to renounce him. I want you to go kill him. And, see, again... I'd never do any good as a political candidate because sooner or later, at about, you know, if I was Senator Obama, at about the 150,000th asking of the question, that would be my response. Listen, if I go slit his throat, can we stop talking about this, you horse's asses?
You were going to say something else there, weren't you?
Yes, I sure was, but I work pretty good on the fly, Vince.
I'm sitting here, though. I'm a former Roman Catholic myself while we're on the religion thing.
Okay.
The Pope scares me.
Yeah. And now, I mean, I just saw this story that said he went and prayed with victims of sexual abuse today. Holy mackerel. You mean the victims of sexual abuse were actually willing to go and sit down and pray with the enabler of it? That's scary.
They've been screaming about him wanting him to do that forever, and they kept this all a secret because we didn't want to reopen the wounds. Never mind that keeping the whole thing a secret and not saying anything has just had people frothing at the mouth about it over the last month or so, pretty much since they figured out he was coming here.
Well, and there's a reason he's not going to Boston. You know,
stay in his Popemobile.
Well, it would make sense to go to Boston, but he won't go to Boston because that's where the whole thing broke. And he would be confronted there by people who are not okay with just sitting down and praying over it. Who believe, go to that Book of James thing, that faith without works is dead. You know, you can pray all day, but until you get really serious about it, the prayers aren't going to count for much.
It's kind of like I believe, you know, I have my own religion, my own little thing that I do, and, you know, prayer is great, but it's not meant to be the whole end-all be-all. It's meant to augment actual action.
Well, the more you work, the more likely your prayers are to be answered.
There you go.
That's why I said what I did about what Jesus said were the first, greatest and second greatest commandment. Love thy neighbor as thyself is second greatest behind love God, because when you're loving your neighbor, you're loving God. But that's just easy for me, I guess. Or I'm insane or something.
We're liberals. I guess some people say that in order to be liberals, we have to, by definition, be insane. But I'm okay with being insane. It's quite fun, actually.
If being liberal is being insane, I want no part of the sane people. Because they do stuff like...
It doesn't matter if the voices aren't real, so long as they have good ideas.
Reminds me of a T-shirt that my wife has. It says, sometimes, some days, it's just not worth chewing through the straps.
Here you go.
And the T-shirt that my brother-in-law has that says, I only do what the voices in my head tell me to do.
My personal favorite is, like I just said, doesn't matter if they're not real, so long as they have good ideas.
Exactly, Vince. Exactly. So, you know, so the Pope came to America. Big deal. But do you get what I'm saying about, you know, spending our tax dollars on him?
Yeah.
I mean, the Secret Service and working with the Swiss Guards or whatever. Meanwhile,
a party he can't even be bothered to show up to.
Right. Meanwhile, Jimmy Carter, the most peaceful man on earth, short perhaps of the Dalai Lama himself, He goes to Israel and wants to go to Gaza, and the Israeli government says, well, we're not going to give you any security help on that, and what's more, you can't go to Gaza. Now, all Jimmy Carter wants to do is talk to the Fatah people, he wants to talk to the Hamas people, he wants to talk to the Israel people, he wants to talk to the Syrian people and the Egyptian people.
That would actually acknowledge them as human beings, and we can't have that.
Oh, oops, the baby. Golly.
Can't have that. Uh-huh. Wouldn't be seemly.
They'll see the big board. Oh, God, we're living in Dr. Strangelove world. We just are, Vince.
I think we're more living in Bizarro world, personally. Up is down, left is right, right is wrong.
Yeah, and waterboarding's not torture, and capital punishment isn't cruel.
Okay, but here's my question on that. Oh, joy, the website's working again. Your website's been being mean to me all day. What I want to know is okay, if Bush said it's not torture, but then apparently was in a meeting where everybody said it was torture, and he said it was torture and it was okay with it, does that now make him even more of a liar? And is anybody actually going to point this out? And are we ever
going to actually hold that man
to what he says?
Only if he got a blowjob while it was happening. Oh, wow, that was really nasty, but I'm sorry. That appears to be the benchmark standard.
It seems to be. It does. I mean, for crying,
if there was a stain on Condi's dress from the day that they had the meeting, we'd spend $70 million investigating.
We'd be good, exactly. I mean, wow. How many people had bombs dropped on them for the whole Monica Lewinsky thing?
I know. Here, you want another one of those fun little comparisons, Vince? Let's try this one. Yesterday, while the Pope was telling George about how important it was for us to have the human rights and all of that stuff, at the very same instant, I mean, this is like something, you know that scene from The Godfather where Michael's standing there in the church service and he's saying, do you renounce the devil and all his servants? I do renounce him. And you have the jump cuts to all of his people going around and wiping out the opposition and garroting people and shooting them and drowning them and blowing them up and all of that stuff. You know, are you familiar with The Godfather?
No.
Oh, darn.
I think I know what scene you're talking about.
Okay. Well, there's that scene. Well, this is like that. At the same time that the Pope is telling George Bush that the United States must do everything possible to fight all forms of violence so that immigrants may lead dignified lives, at the very instant that that's taking place, there were more than 280 undocumented workers seized at Pilgrim's Pride Plaza. Jeez, why did I do this? Pilgrim's Pride processing plants in five different states.
That's 20 times fast.
I can't say it once.
Sorry, go ahead.
So this is just sickening. Rounding up people, separating them from their children. Astonishing stuff because, you know, we don't just detain the supposed illegal immigrants. We have concentration camps like the Don T. Hutto Correctional Facility in Texas, Vince, where we have put children behind barbed wire. It is now documented that the children in these concentration camps have been repeatedly put in cells alone for hours. They've been awakened in the middle of the night with flashlights in their faces, and they've been threatened with being permanently separated from their parents. This is what was going on.
American.
Yeah, and therefore they have none of our American rights.
Oh hell, they're barely even human. I hear you, man. It's retarded.
It's evil.
The question is what are we going to do about it? Yeah, evil's right.
With any luck at all, we will stop the internecine warfare and let the last five states go vote in their primary in peace without the snarking and the sniping, and then we will come together and we will make sure that America is protected from scum like John McCain.
but I'm a silly little idealist.
Well, let me throw this one at you. Let's assume worst-case scenario. And God help us all, a few months from now, we're talking about President McCain. What then? We can't just give up.
You know, I'll be here, God willing. It's Flying Spaghetti Monster willing. Dog willing. Nothing willing. If I'm here, I'll be here. And we'll keep talking about it, and we'll keep the light lit. We'll keep the fire burning. But if John McCain becomes President of the United States, we are screwed, Vince. We're just screwed.
Man, we've been screwed for the past 8 years.
Yeah, but no, the possibility of getting unscrewed begins to approach mathematical zero.
See, I don't believe in that point. I do believe that the possibility of getting unscrewed, like within my generation, falls to almost naught, but...
Because if McCain becomes president, we move into irrevocable empire. All right? And there has never been, to this day, an empire that has voluntarily backed away from that status. And once you go empire, you fall. Every last one of them.
What about the British Empire?
It fell. Haven't noticed many steamers going around to take India Pale Ale to the troops in the Raj lately.
Well, yeah, but Britain's still around. I when you say fall, I think like Roman Empire, they don't exist anymore.
Yeah, but the Roman Empire, even then, like I said, they don't put up a neon light that says, you know, the empire has fallen. You know, Charlemagne, in his Frankish Empire, Charlemagne was called the Holy Roman Emperor. He thought he was Caesar. Nicholas in 1917 in Russia was referred to as the Tsar, the T-S-A-R or the C-Z-A-R, and that is a direct spin-off of Caesar. Nobody ever says, you know, that the balloon's gone up, but it goes up. And you can only sort of judge by the surroundings. Hey, Vince, I got to roll. We're out of time. We've got a brand new, fresh Strictly Confidential coming up, so I got to be on time. Exactly.
All right.
All right, talk to you soon. Thanks for calling.
Talk to you soon.
Later.
No problem.
Our buddy Vince in Georgia. And yeah, really, brand spanking new Strictly Confidential on the way with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, and a super-duper exciting guest this evening. Downright historic, worldwide recognized, known Linda Clifford. Coming to the program tonight. So make sure you're around for that. Horn section afterward, and I'll have to check in with John Fox as to whether or not we're going to have a Thursday version of All Foxed Up. But that's all on the way, okay? Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks to those of you who contribute to keep the horn on the air. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, the bravest, hardest-working people I know. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 131 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Drop by Coal River Mountain Watch and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, April 17, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on April the 17th, 2008, you're indeed listening to a live show, and it's great to be back with you. I have been in the Internet wilderness for a couple of weeks now, but I'm back, and we're ready to go. Thank you for sticking with us during the replays. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there to the chat room and to the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a very small part. You'll find links there also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. One moment, making a tiny adjustment to the studio. There you go, studio. That ought to help. There you go. Okay, that's done. You know, I have to mention our friend Glenn Rivera. Glenn is a dear friend of the show and the Head On Radio Network. Bob, we're going to have to give Glenn a title. I think he deserves it. Glenn works very hard behind the scenes and gets us and helps to schedule some of the most wonderful music guests that you can imagine, and DJs too. Glenn works tirelessly. He never ceases to surprise me by giving me a call and saying, "Guess who might be on your show?" And I say, "Who?" And he tells me, and my jaw drops. But I have to tell you, this evening, my jaw is really dropped all the way to the floor. This happens, you know, on this show, it's a strange thing. I've had mayors and archbishops. I've had drag queens and rabbis. I've had transsexuals. I've had DJs from the four corners of America, New York, Miami, San Diego, Seattle. I've even had a woman who counsels straight women who find out that their husbands are gay. Heck, I've even had her on twice. But it always sets my knees to shaking, and my vocabulary shrivels to goo-goo gaga when I hear a name like Linda Clifford is going to be on Strictly Confidential. You know, it's the old thing. The same thing happened when Glenn called me and told me that we were going to have Cynthia Manley on the show. If it's one of the artists whose music that I played back in the day or in a club. In fact, I still remember clearly the first time I heard Red Light in a club. I remember clearly the first time I played it. I was in Portland, Oregon. I remember clearly the first time I heard If My Friends Could See Me.